Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop renewal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are on the 18th day of May, 2015. We are live. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And an advanced program note applying to this evening. We've been having some thunderstorms blowing through here, and that can be hard on infrastructure that's strung on toothpicks through a forest, a temperate rainforest. So if, perchance, the program should happen to just go away, you'll know why. I hope it doesn't. I hope everything just remains normal, normal, extra normal. But they ain't no guarantee. No, no. No, there's not. I don't know why. I don't know why the rain makes the internet go out.
Mommy, why is there air?
I don't. But it does. So we have that. Okay. But that's, you know, all just in case, right? Right. Cross your fingers, okay? This is Moran Monday on the Horn, yes indeed. And good evening, and a quick cowbell to the folks who were right there in the chat room at the time the program began. Good evening to Anatole. Good evening, Doctor Who. Good evening, Four of Nine and Chuck a Punch and Mr. Gibson. Good evening to longtime indefatigable veteran chat room moderators, Lottie and Man Cave, who used to be Sparky, but Sparky's a third stage guild navigator who has folded space to become Man Cave. You too can be part of the Horn chat room. Just jump on by if you'd like. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. Choose yourself a screen name and a password, and you'll be part of the rollicking, good time, real time extravaganza that is, in fact, the Horn chat room. This is a listener supported effort. Thank you very kindly to those of you who have lately helped out in making it so. Thank you this afternoon to Bill and to Jan and Jerry. Thank you very much, and thank you very kindly over the weekend to David in Ohio, who was a huge help with fundraising this weekend. And thank you, because I didn't mention it last week, thank you very kindly to Chris in Germany for a Have a Show on Me. Have a Show on Me, of course, refers to the amount of money we try to raise in any given program. In this case, that's $200. We try to raise that every evening, and hopefully that'll happen this evening as well. Thank you very much. Have a Show on Me to David in Ohio and to Chris. Thank you very, very kindly. We're actually out in front a little bit. I hesitate to say that, but we are. We're out in front a bit. Thanks going back all the way into last week. And we need to hopefully stay that way, because, you know, more bills getting paid this week. Hey, no let up. But that's where we are. If you want to help out, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. You can ignore some of the more nosy, neighborish kind of fields in that interface, and you can just put in enough to get you to the next screen. It's all about just getting to the next screen. You can there you can make your PayPal choices and whatever. If you prefer, if you prefer to go through the U.S. Postal Service, and some folks do, you can send checks and money orders to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801, with the gentle reminder that said checks and money orders should be made payable to The Horn and not Bob Kincaid, as I never see him. That's all stuff that Boss Man Wayne does. And thank you very kindly, Jeremy in Vermont, noting loud and clear on TuneIn, Bob. I appreciate it. That means that what I'm doing here is actually getting out there. Wonderful. Yeah, really, it is Moran Monday, and honest to Pete, I don't think I had been off the air for 15 minutes before I saw my first Moran. Really. It can get confusing over the course of a weekend. And they stacked up like freaking cordwood this weekend. Oh my God. So let's get this rolling.
You gotta remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know. Morons.
Yes indeed, yes indeed. The steam has been pumped into the apparatus and the billows and the bladders and the palavers. And the calliope is hotted right up. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. It's Morin Monday on the Horn. You will not believe your ears as you bear witness to these Morins behind the thin cybernetic veil of canvas. Oh, my gracious sakes alive. Tell the friends, tell the neighbors. It's Morin Monday on the Horn. Yes, you'll hear them all. Right-wing Morins. Earther Morans, Deather Morans, Ninther Morans, Tenther Morans, Booger Eatin' Morans, Bircher Morans, Bagger Morans, Repiglicans, Libertarians, Morans, one and all, and even the occasional stray from outside the booger sphere that is Moranify. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Yes, indeed, we did it for next to nothing. Pennies on the dollar per program, you too will be exposed to the absolute insouciant finest in Moran-ness. Oh, yes, indeed, yes, indeed. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, mercy. Like I said, it was Friday night. It really was. It was Friday night when I saw my first Moran. And, well, why not? I mean, how long's it been since we've had a nomination for the right wing's answer to Steve Urkel? Yes, that's right, Alan West. Alan West, who was a Congress critter in Florida, but then decided to decamp and found himself wandering around in Texas. More on Texas this Moran Monday in a moment. Not only did Alan West go to Texas, Alan West went to Wally World in Texas. No, not one of the Wally Worlds that's been emptied out and hollowed out and caverned out and tunneled under and turned into a FEMA re-education camp just waiting to be filled with patriotic Texans when the blue-helmeted U.N. Army sweeps down as a part of the false flag operation that is Jade Helm 15 and rounds up all the freedom protectors and takes them for re-education at the Wally World FEMA re-education camps. No, not those Walmarts. No, this was a fully functioning Walmart there in Texas. And by the time he, being Alan West, American hero, by the time he got home, he was fairly on fire to get to the keyboards where he penned a stunning screed about his experience in the Wally World. I guess we shouldn't be surprised. Wally World, after all, being part of the Obama plan to impose Common Core Agenda 21 on us and invade Texas and set up U.S. military bases all over. Oh, wait a minute, it's already been done. Never mind. But anyway, you know, Alan West got discriminated against in the Wally World. Now remember, Alan West is one of America's best Christians. Mm-hmm. And therefore, he is always on the lookout for some ISIS head-lopping activity. Yes, he is. And he found it. And he found out that Sharia law is being put into place right there in the Wally World. Oh, yes, brethren and sistren, right there in the Wally World, where they used to have American flags all over the place, but now they've been replaced by some demonic little self-portrait of Kurt Vonnegut's butthole. Yes, that little asterisk. I guess nobody told the people in Bentonville, but it's true, that way back, Kurt Vonnegut drew a picture of an asterisk. I've even got a T-shirt with it on it. You can buy that. You can get that T-shirt, the Kurt Vonnegut. It's a Novel Tees, NovelTees.com, NovelTees.com, and they've got T-shirts done up as sort of like softball league jerseys for opposing teams. One's gray, one's maroon. The Vonnegut one's maroon. It's got the number 5 on the back, and it says Vonnegut across the top on the back, just like a player's jersey. And over the left, over the left breast where the pocket would be, there is an asterisk, which is actually Kurt Vonnegut's self-portrait of his own butthole. He was funny that way, Kurt Vonnegut. Mm-hmm. But that's all you find at Wally World now. The whole place is full of signs with Kurt Vonnegut's asshole on them instead of the Merkin flag like it used to be. And that is because of Sharia law, brethren and sisters. I know, friends and neighbors, yes, wrong day. The angry Indian is already sitting anxiously by his internet radio speakers. All I got is a 4-word message. I gotta hear this. It's true, because he put it in, I mean, it's not somebody writing about Steve Urkel, I mean, Alan West. It's Alan West writing about it from his own website, which has a copy of his autograph at the top, and it says, steadfast and loyal. Yes. My daughter Aubrey and I arrived in Dallas and our home in Woodbridge on Sunday morning. We had departed from Palm Beach Gardens Saturday evening after we watched Austin head off for her senior prom. A doggone big deal, dads! Because, you know, the dads need to be told that their daughter's prom is a... Yeah. Back in Dallas, after we unloaded the U-Haul, Aubrey, a very organized young lady, began the initial arranging of her room, and then came the request. Dad, I know you haven't been eating well here, so we need to go grocery shopping. Dang it, says Alan West. This is what happens when your daughter is pursuing a master's in molecular cellular biology. I wonder how young Aubrey West would respond to a question about whether or not evolution is real. Demons! So she's probably pursuing that master's in molecular cell biology. Oh, I don't know. Some religious hustler institution. They're all over the place down there. So we were off to the local Walmart superstore just up the road. We gathered up her desired foodstuffs and headed to the checkout. And then this happened. There was a young man doing the checkout, and another Walmart employee came over and put up a sign, no alcohol products in this lane. So, being the inquisitive fella I am, I used my additional set of eyes, glasses. Ha ha ha, did you see what he did there? He made a funny, Alan West did, his additional set of eyes, his glasses. You know what? That was probably funnier than hell in the 1600s. To see the young checkout man's name, let me just say it was not... You have to look around. It was not Steve. Now, why a guy who looks like the grown-up nightmare version of Steve Urkel would choose the name Steve in his own column? Well, that's... Do not question the motives of the goddess of irony. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. I pointed the sign out to Aubrey, and her response was a simple question. How is it, asked Aubrey, that this Muslim employee could refuse service to customers based on his religious beliefs, but Christians are being forced to participate in specific events contrary to their religious beliefs? Alan B. West, steadfast and loyal. You'll notice it doesn't say intelligent and discerning. Continued, boy howdy, that is one astute young lady. Yes, sirree, she is astute. She is beginning her master's in molecular and cellular biology, and she knows that if she is standing in a checkout lane at a Wally World superstore in Texas, Stan, and they put up a sign that says no alcohol sales in this lane, they know that it is because of the creepy effects of Sharia Muslim ISIS Kenyan Muslim fundamentalist Sharia is socialization or something. Except when it's not. But it didn't slow Alan B. West down any. Imagine that. This employee at Walmart refused to just scan a bottle or container of an alcoholic beverage, and that is acceptable. A Christian business owner declines to participate or provide service to a specific event, a gay wedding, which contradicts their faith, and the state crushes them. You all know the real answer, right? Practically the minute I started, and you heard it all unfolding, you knew what the real answer was, didn't you? Of course. Steve, take note. Steve says, I thought America's best Christian was Betty Bowers. Oh, wait, she is the best Christian. Sorry, my bad. Marty's got it. Wait a minute. That's for you, Marty. She can't be that astute, Marty notes. She didn't consider that the cashier could have been under 21, did she? Marty adding, she didn't consider that the cashier could have been under 21, and there's a state law, which you'll get to, I'm certain. We will. No, both Alan B. West, steadfast and loyal, and his daughter Aubrey are apparently the teabagging idiot morons. Because that's what it is. If you're not 21 in Texas, apparently, you cannot sell alcohol. Come to think of it, I don't think you can do that in West Virginia either. Because I've seen the assistant manager over to the Wiggling Pig have to come over. And, you know, we might get a bottle of Ripple or something, or some Annie Green Springs or whatnot to marinate a hunk of meat in before we put it on the grill, or some Rex Goliath or any of those other, you know, old baseball glove Chardonnay, whatever. But, you know, if it doesn't have a screw top on it and the boys under the bridge can't drink it, I ain't touching it. But anyway, there'll be this young high. high school girl checking people through, and she'll see the bottle of demon wine sitting, and she'll holler, "I need a little help." And one of the over 21 people will come through, step into the box, and go kapoop, but the under 21 year old didn't sell the demon wine, because you know what, those demon molecules can get right through the glass, and your under 21 grocery store clerk can be drunk like that, just like that. You can't do that anywhere in America, because it would be hypocritical, see, to tell under 21-year-olds that they can't buy it, but they can sell it. Wait, Marty says you can in California, though. My first job was in a liquor store months before I turned 21. Yep, see? But that's neither here nor there, because it didn't change an iota, because Alan B. West all the time was absolutely convinced that he had been the victim of Sharia law discrimination. Editor's update. We spoke to the Walmart store, and apparently employees under 21 years old are prohibited from selling cigarettes and alcohol. However, that isn't to say Walmart isn't selectively caving to Muslim demands, such as this case regarding halal meat in Ohio. I have to wonder, Alan B. West, steadfast and loyal, writes, if Christians were threatening to blow things up, would they be treated differently as a faith-based collective group? After all, perhaps there are those who take the whole turn the other cheek assertion as a sign of weakness, a gap to exploit. Well, there was that little that guy named Eric Rudolph, now wasn't there, Alan? And there was that Timothy McVeigh. And there was that buddy of his, Nichols, Randy, Roger, anyway. And he's gone up the river for a long time, and we horizontally crucified Timothy McVeigh. And there is the fact that the identified single greatest threat to freedom in Merca, or actually just continued breathing by Merkin citizens working on that more perfect union, it turns out to be right-wing extremism. We've had that conversation. But you got to be on the lookout now that ISIS is everywhere, because see, now we know that everybody, every person, every individual, every young man, every young woman in Merca under the age of 21 is at least in the fevered, thin, gray settlings that slosh around the great big old lizard brain amygdala of Alan B. West between his ears and pass for brains. They're all secret Muslims. No, Marty said, I thought old Timothy McVeigh died of extreme lead poisoning. No, I'm pretty sure we horizontally crucified him. Right. So there's that. But I did note more on Texas in a moment. I heard the news, and I was downright worried, because we have friends in Waco, Texas. Hi, Dr. Allen. Hi, Waco Friends of Peace. I'm trusting they were nowhere near the Twin Peaks restaurant in South Waco, at a busy shopping plaza there, when a group of motorcycle enthusiasts by the name of the Bandidos and the Cossacks, and the Cossacks brought their friends the Scimitars, decided to turn the shopping plaza there into the OK Corral. They really did. The apparently the Cossacks and their friends, the Scimitars, have a disagreement of sorts with the Bandidos, and decided to settle it in that most manly of fashion, i.e., with gunfire. And not just a little bit of gunfire. There was a whole lot of freedom protecting going on in Waco. Yes, indeed. On Sunday, no less. I don't know if you can even buy. I don't even know if you can buy buy beer, even if the salesperson at the Walmart in Waco isn't a Sharia law salesperson on a Sunday. That was yesterday. Happened about the middle of the day. Primarily, it was between the Bandidos and the Cossacks. Mm-hmm. And they have what the New York Times describes as a long-running feud. Right. A couple of other motorcycle clubs were also involved. There are, as of this moment, at least 9 less members of the Cossacks, Bandidos, Scimitars, and 2 other unnamed motorcycle clubs. Those 2 unnamed motorcycle clubs probably having a meeting at their clubhouse right now saying, how the hell do we not get a mention in the New York Times? The Bandidos get a mention. The Cossacks get a mention. Damn Scimitars get a mention. What about us? You know, when your motorcycle gang name is the Aardvarks, you're going to get run over once in a while. I did not check in because I did not have the spirit for it today, I must admit, check in with Alex Jones, where I'm sure there were repeated cries of, false flag! False flag! Those cops were on standby. They were just waiting for the Bandidos and the Aardvarks and the Armadillos and the Scimitars and the Assegais. Well, actually, there's a razor about that long. And who else? Cossacks, Bandidos, Scimitars, Aardvarks. Yeah, they were just waiting. They were just having a peaceful lunch at the Twin Peaks restaurant, and the old bummer. Anti-freedom forces put up a false flag and sent the police in to gather up all their guns. Because they did. Yeah. About 134 firearms were gathered up by the Waco police. Don't worry, though. Don't worry. You hate to see a good firearm go to waste. And they won't. Because once all the dust has settled and the blood has dried, I'm sure that much like many other law enforcement agencies here in the greatest country on earth in the world today, now, forever, they will be put back into the stream of commerce at an auction which will go to support the Waco Police Department. Mm-hmm. If they can just sort out who did the killing, they might actually charge a few of these Bandidos and Cossacks and Scimitars, Aardvarks and Armadillos with death penalty murder. But there's going to be a whole lot of forensics involved, and Lord only knows, the FBI might be called in. And well, the FBI really can't be trusted with their lab work these days, can they? No, not so much. So, yeah, as of this morning, the number arrested was somewhere between 170 and 192. They had such a hard time rounding up all the Bandidos and Scimitars and Armadillos and Aardvarks and Cossacks, don't forget the Cossacks, that they didn't really have a good grip on the number, and they didn't have enough... So they took them to the Waco Convention Center and Visitors Bureau to hold them until they could get them properly arrested and detained. because they had so many arrestees that it would have overwhelmed the jail, which I'm sure already has a fair and representative sampling of the local population in it. And they only had two magistrates. And those two magistrates were handling all the arraignments, or arrangements, as we call them here in the Hills and Hollers. They worked up a system. They said, $1 million bond. Next, $1 million bond. Next, $1 million bond. Next, $1 million bond. Now, no, the backstory is not entirely clear, but apparently there was a gathering, and the Central Texas Marketplace Shopping Plaza just off I-35 there in South Waco saw hundreds of motorcycle enthusiasts descend upon it, and I guess the Twin Peaks restaurant there is known for its Sunday lunch special, and When a bunch of gunned up motorcycle enthusiasts show up, the Methodists and the Presbyterians and the Lutherans going out for after sermon Sunday dinner, they kind of dry up and blow away, as you might imagine. Thank goodness none of the members of the Cossacks, the Scimitars, the Bandidos, the Aardvarks, and the Armadillos were hoping to get gay married that Sunday, because if they had, I'm sure the Lutherans and the Presbyterians and the Baptists and the Methodists and the hay shakers and floor rollers and strychnine swiggers and serpent handlers would have all joined right in the merry fun. Sergeant Swanton, who is a Waco Police Department spokesman, Sergeant Patrick Swanton, did the talking to the New York Times, and he said, "There were multiple people on the scene firing weapons at each other. Then they turned on our officers. Our officers returned gunfire, wounding and possibly killing several." That's the very last paragraph in the story. So, the Bandidos and the Scimitars and the Cossacks and the Armadillos and the Aardvarks were all shooting each other at, well, they were shooting at each other. Not, apparently, particularly effectively. Because, as it turns out, some of the killings were actually perpetrated by the Waco police. Now, I'm not complaining about this. When you have someone trying to bust out an al dente, al fresco war in the parking lot of the Twin Peaks restaurant there in Waco, it might take some deadly force to get them to stop it. I do find it interesting, however, that this is being described as a battle between rival biker gangs, when the folks who apparently did at least some of the damage and some of the killing were actually the police. Who are not listed as being any of those who will face capital murder charges. Of course, they won't. Why? Well, among other things, an interesting decision came out from the rats on SCOTUS today. It was today that they handed down a ruling regarding police use of deadly force, right? Okay. And the Supreme Court ruled today that, contrary to previous rulings underneath them, police officers, write this down, you might want it for future reference, police officers cannot be sued. If they happen to discharge their weapons into the relatively soft corporeal flesh of a mentally disabled woman threatening violence. Teresa Sheehan is the woman who got shot. Mercifully, she survived. And lower courts had granted her the right to sue the police officers. As they note over there at Think Progress, a number of studies have indicated that about half of the people who are victims of police shootings are mentally ill, and that, like the community of color in this country, the mentally ill are disproportionately more likely to be victims of excessive police force. It should be noted that, as is often the case with people who are shot who have disabilities, this actually started out as a call to the police for assistance from the police. At issue today was the nexus between police and their predilection for using deadly force and the Americans with Disabilities Act. But the justices decided not to reach the issue and took a powder instead. The city of San Francisco was the appellant in the case. And while disability rights activists had written to the city imploring them to drop their appeal, they didn't. Saying, while San Francisco may intend to craft arguments that it believes will limit the damage to individuals' rights under the Americans with Disabilities Act, it will have little control over what the Supreme Court does. Congratulations, disability advocates in the San Francisco Bay Area. You were right! San Francisco did plead in its appeal for a limited ruling, merely absolving its police officers from shooting Ms. Sheehan and not reaching the question of whether or not people with disabilities should be treated differently by police. The ruling from the Supreme Court is, of its sort, a lulu. They held the Fourth Amendment standard is reasonableness, and it is reasonable for police to move quickly if delay would gravely endanger their lives or the lives of others. This was, of course, Sammy Bad Breath Alito writing for the majority. Six justices agreed. And they all agreed not to opine on the relevance of whether of the fact that Teresa Sheehan was disabled. In point of fact, those solons in Washington decided that there's no way, there is no possible way that the police could have been expected to take her mental illness into account when they went into her room at a group home twice. Okay, the first time they couldn't have been. The second time, maybe, yeah. A little? No. No. So, the upshot is that the police are free to blaze away at mentally ill citizens of the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. Whether they're, well, if, as long as they perceive some sort of a threat. This does have ramifications, however. The folks at Think Progress interviewed University of Michigan law professor Samuel Bagenstos, who said, when the Supreme Court says an officer is immune from suit for damages because the state of the law was unclear at the time, that doesn't get a lot of press. But that's the kind of decision that makes it really hard to do anything about the Tamir Rice situation. It keeps the courts from imposing the appropriate incentives on police departments to stop use of excessive force. You may even recall the Teresa Sheehan case. We talked about it here on the program. That's the one where the police were called to the group home, and when they showed up, they didn't have a warrant, and Teresa Sheehan reacted violently, and she had a knife, and she told the officers she would kill them. Just think back to that terrible scene in Dune where Sting continues cycling around Kyle MacLachlan screaming, "I will kill you!" Right? Can we get another reading on that line, Mr. Sting? "I will kill you!" No, never mind. And action. "I will kill you!" But none of the Emperor's Sardaukar went after either Sting or the Kwisatz Haderach. Nonetheless, when the Ninth Circuit heard the case, they wrote, "The officers called for backup, but rather than waiting for backup or taking other actions to maintain the status quo or de-escalate the situation, the officers drew their weapons and forced their way back into Sheehan's room, presumably to disarm, subdue, and arrest her, and to prevent her escape, although there do not appear to have been any means of escape available. Sheehan once again threatened the officers with a knife, causing the officers to shoot Sheehan 5 or 6 times. They really weren't sure. 5 or 6. I mean, come on, guys. Count the shell casings? I don't even want to know. And so there was plenty of evidence that the officers didn't follow appropriate protocol, but oh well. When it came right down to the 6-person majority in D.C., the Supremes said, whether the officers followed training protocol is not a factor in granting police officers qualified immunity. Considering the specific situation confronting Reynolds, one of the cops, and Holder, the other cops, they had sufficient reason to believe that their conduct was justified. Those are the words of Samuel Alito, who, remember, has a history of writing an opinion in which he said it was absolutely okay to blow the brains right out of a young black male who was running away and presenting no threat at all to the police and was, in fact, trying to get away from them. Right. Let that one rattle around in your noggin for a minute, though. This is an exquisite exercise in judicial pretzel making. Considering the specific situation confronting Reynolds and Holder, they had sufficient reason to believe that their conduct was justified. So, in other words, if the police decide you need a good shooting, they will be justified in shooting you. Because that's what Sammy Bad Breath Alito wrote. Do you think we're reasonably justified in shooting her? I think we just decided we were, didn't we? BAM! Isn't it charming? Yeah. So, just to be sure. Bandidos, Cossacks, Scimitars, Assegais, Aardvarks and Armadillos shooting at each other. Bad. Police deciding to shoot a woman with a knife who probably would have been hard-pressed to harm any of them. Okay. I mean, she lived and everything. She should be happy. I mean, I'll bet her mental illness is all gone away now, hasn't it? Because, I mean, nothing will straighten you out quite like being near killed by the police. In the future, however, it will be interesting to see if there are any opinings from the for-profit media and its particular right wing as to what caused the shootout at the Twin Peaks restaurant. Will there be any discussions of whether the bandidos or the police, for that matter, who did some of the killing, whether they came from single parent homes? I wonder if any of the police who did the killings will suddenly be discovered to have recently committed a strong arm robbery, or had a history of selling Lucy's. Or a series of busts for, I don't know, anything. You know, beaten on their wives. Spouses. Probably not. I'm just curious what the demographic makeup was of the bandidos and Cossacks and Scimitars and Assegais and Armadillos and Aardvarks. Just don't know. Don't worry. Has anybody? I've seen a few stories on this. Has anybody yet seen, as Marty notes, references to any of the motorcycle enthusiasts as thugs? Watch this space, as the saying goes. Note coming in from Jim, he says, people with disabilities. I remember that actions against folks with mental illness and disabilities received special treatment by the state with impunity, a place named Hartheim, not so long ago in Germany. Take it for what it was. The Angry Indian tells me there was one African involved in the... Oh, it's a brawl. Yes, it's a brawl. It's not a little battle or a gun battle or a shootout. It's a brawl. Right. Oh, and speaking of Cossacks, here's one. Just today. Well, yesterday, actually. A bust, a portrait bust in the Roman style. Was unveiled in Russia. A group of Cossacks unveiled a bust of Vladimir Putin, done up, complete with ancient armor and drapey clothing, in the form of a Russian emperor, or Russian general, a Caesar, which you know, there's no particular import to this, except to point out that Caesar was originally a family name of the gens Iulia back in the misty days of the Roman Republic. There was something about, they were said to have some reference to their fine heads of hair. That's how family names came around. I mean, there was another one, the red beard. Lost to the mist of time. But when Gaius Julius Caesar adopted posthumously in his will his grandnephew Octavian was allowed to take on the family name of Caesar, which he then did. The Senate later voted him the title permanently of Augustus. All right? So Gaius Octavian became Augustus Caesar. He adopted his wife Livia's son Tiberius, who then became Tiberius Caesar, although Tiberius had been a Nero. Tiberius gave way to Caligula, who was the son of Germanicus, who was the one good one of the lot, so necessarily Tiberius had him bumped off. Germanicus was a stud. Caligula went mad, gave way to Claudius, who is still Julio-Claudian, and he died and gave way to Nero, and Nero managed to kill off his own progeny in utero, bringing about the end of the actual family, Caesar. I mean, it was kaput, done. The name hung on, Caesar, and it became a thing, like king or emperor. Eventually, the West would be broken away from the East, and there would be two Augustuses, and their juniors in waiting would be known as Caesar. And thus did Caesar, Caesar, the correct Latin pronunciation, Caesar, huh? Sounds like Kaiser, sounds like Tsar, yeah? The name Caesar survived well over 1,000 years until, I'll be dipped, just about this time, in 1453, when the armies of Mehmet II finally breached the seemingly impregnable walls of Constantinople and overran the place, at which point in time, by right of conquest, Mehmet II, good Turk that he was, Ottoman, whatever, took on the title of Kaiser of Rome, Caesar of Rome. Now, in that time period, the Byzantines, occupants of Constantinople, had been sending out feelers into the world. They preserved the knowledge of the classical world there in Byzantium, Constantinople, long after it was lost in the darkness that befell Western Europe after the rise of the Roman Catholic Church and the fall of empire. generally denoted by Gibbon as being 476 of the Common Era. The twin eagles of the Byzantine Empire were the twin eagles of the House of Romanov, who billed themselves as czars, direct line descendants, recipients of the eagles of Rome. And so it is that Sunday, out somewhere outside St. Petersburg, Andrei Polyakov said, "We wanted to immortalize Vladimir Putin as conqueror and statesman who returned Crimea to Russia. Image of Roman emperor is one of wisdom. Historic role of Vladimir Putin, who succeeded in reuniting Russia and Crimea." Cossacks have a history of being fiercely loyal to the Kremlin, and they were essentially, the Tsar's border enforcers. I apologize for the bad Boris Badenov impression there. About 12 miles out from St. Petersburg, there's a bunch of land owned by a Cossack association, and that's where they put the bust. It's a fascinating study in everything old is new again. At the time that he was assassinated, Gaius Julius Caesar was the victim, if he can be said to have been one, the victim of a campaign to try to smear him, and it was run by the people who call themselves the Optimates. We would call them the 1%, who tried to ignite fears inside the Republic. It was not yet an empire, that Caesar wanted to be king. They made a big stink out of it when he wore a certain color of boots. Someone came up to him in the streets one day and offered him a crown, which he very publicly and vociferously rejected. Nonetheless, he had been named by the Senate dictator for life. And there was a young jerk by the name of Marcus Antonius back behind him, who was his master of the horse, which is second in command when you're dictator of Rome. And as much as being afraid of Caesar wanting to be king, I think they were afraid of Marcus Antonius, Mark Antony to you and me, having any power at all, because he went a little power mad at one point in time when he was master of the horse. He was seen attempting to drive a chariot through the streets of Rome that was pulled by lions because it had some mythological significance. So an attempt to create a cult of personality has existed around Vladimir Putin, who, like Caesar, has said, no, I am merely a common man of the people who has a little bit of power and a lot of money. It is worth remembering that Vladimir Putin sees the breakup of the Soviet Union as what he has described as one of history's great tragedies. This past Saturday, he burnished his heroic credentials by playing ice hockey in Sochi and scored 8 goals for his side. Putin's team won 18-2. Yeah, who wants to be the goalie that stops one of Putin's pucks? Right? So So at the unveiling ceremony on Saturday or Sunday or whenever, Cossacks in their traditional dress of caftans and fleece hats sang the Russian anthem and uncovered a statue of Vladimir Putin. Dressed as Caesar. And there is nothing new under the sun. Right? So there we go. That's pretty much the filibobster here at a minute past seven in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. I welcome your thoughts, your calls, if you wish to participate. Otherwise, I got a lot more morans. Lots and lots of morans. You know the numbers, right? The Gizmo line, 304-663-4676. And the other line, Harold. We used to call it the Skype line, but that confuses people. It just happens to be a part of a Skype account. But anyway, 304-574-8178, or Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. And they all work equally well, and you are welcome, as I said, to participate. We'll take a break and see which way it falls. This is listener supported conversation radio, and we are looking for another $160 in that listener support this evening. This is the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
They're like a fireproof Cadillac, conditional tech, backseat gun rack, platinum hubcaps. They pick horses for courses, they're the market forces. They're like order, data, timeline, power, game shows, rodeo, Star Wars, TV. They're the powers that be, if you see them come.
Yeah.
a little something from Roger Waters from a much underappreciated disc, Radio Chaos and the Powers That Be. 6 minutes past the hour on the horn, and let's run over and have a little set, too, with Jim. Hey, Jim. Wrong button. Jim, my bad, not yours. Still getting used to it. There we are. Hi, Jim.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well. Yourself?
Oh, well, for Monday, okay. I was just wondering, this new statue of Mr. Putin, 12 miles away from St. Petersburg,
yep.
I wonder if they put it up at Pushkin Salo, formerly known as Tsarskoe Salo.
Doesn't say in the article, it merely says that it's a plot of ground that's owned by a Cossack association.
I was just wondering about that, because it's almost the same distance from St. Petersburg, 15 clicks.
Apparently that association, such as it is, owns a chunk of ground out there where they go and, I guess, you know, have Cossack barbecues and stuff.
Which probably has a
really, really unpleasant meaning if you dig into history.
Well, I know they were known as the Tsar's enforcers, and particularly they were sent to places that were causing trouble, and then the terms like the Pale of Settlement and stuff like that comes into view.
Yeah, the Cossacks are coming was never good news.
Not really. I mean, they look fine with those big shoulder boards and stuff like that on their horses, but I would certainly hate to be in a village of which they were the object of an exercise. That's for damn sure.
No. I imagine if you search, you'll find the picture of the bust. I mean, it was very nicely executed. It's not it beats the daylights out of that statue of Lucille Ball they tried to put up in her hometown in New York recently. Good God, that thing! It was frightening. She looked like something from a horror movie. It wasn't even remotely Lucille Ball, but I mean, this is pretty cool. I mean, he's all shaven headed and everything, and he's got the drapey toga and the medallion and the armor that's kind of dribbling off of his manly shoulders. And I mean, it looks like a classic Roman portrait bust.
Well, I mean, look at the symbol of the new Russian Republic. It is exactly what was used by the Romanovs in 1913 for their tercentenary celebration, and, of course, all of their predecessors. I think there were about 12 or 13 czars. I can't remember the exact numbers, but some of them were good, some of them were bad. You know, the first czar was selected from the Romanov family. I think it was after Ivan the Terrible was poisoned by mercury, and thank God for that, because he wasn't in the... Any nice guy to deal with.
No, you don't. You don't get it. That was not irony. Irony was not big back then. Calling him the Terrible was not an inside joke. It's not like calling a big guy tiny.
Well, even
I mean, that, he murdered his own son, for God's sakes.
Oh yeah, he was upset because of a reaction by his son pursuant to some type of court dress that his daughter-in-law was wearing, and he had this big staff he carried around with him and banged his son on the head and killed him. And, of course, you know, the first czar was Michael Romanov, and ironically, after Nicholas II abdicated, so was his brother Michael, known as Floppy, who was narcoleptic. He had a bad habit of driving around in cars and going to sleep. The interesting history of the Romanov is exactly that. It's quite interesting. And it's strange enough that Nicholas II wanted to call, and did call, his last son, who was murdered, Alexis.
Mm-hmm.
A mild czar. Not a cruel czar, but a mild czar.
And he was sickly, right?
Yeah, the boy was hemophiliac. And it's... That period of history has always interested me greatly, and, you know, it's such a pity that the Russian Empire had to get involved in the First World War, because who knows what could have happened. Because back then in 1914, 1913, 1912, Russia was beginning to, recover. There were progressive measures made. His grandfather, who was murdered by anarchists, had even freed the serfs. It was a total freedom, but it was a freedom.
But there had also been upheaval in the first decade of the 20th century in Russia, had there not?
Well, you've had so many. I mean, which one are you referring to? Nicholas I?
No, I thought there had been some. When did Nicholas II accede?
Oh, they had quite a contretemps over the Russo-Japanese War, in which Nicholas II was lured into some type of military adventurism by, some guy who wanted to take Korea from the Japanese. And, of course, Nicholas was warned not to get involved in that war. His mother told him not to do it. His granduncle told him not to do it. And he went ahead and did it. And there were nothing but strikes and riots. And it was the revolution of 1905.
That's what I was thinking of.
And which, of course, they had the appeal to the Tsar at the Winter Palace, and, of course, there were hundreds murdered by the soldiers of the Romanovs. And I don't know, Bob, it's just history would have been so much different, because Nicholas never wanted to be Tsar, Nicholas II. His father, Alexander III, died of nephritis at the age of 49. He was 26. Nicholas was.
Kidney disease, huh?
Mm-hmm. That's what killed Alexander II. And under him, it worked. I mean, a lot of progressivism, importation of money, development of railways, all types of stuff. And Russia was becoming a modern country. I mean, it's hard to wrench an 18th century country into the 20th century in less than 10 or 15 or 20 years.
Well, that's always been the challenge that has faced, because the Kingdom of Kiev was big before Moscow was ever a dot on the map, and the progress of so-called civilization up through the Balkans from Constantinople was a slow progress, impeded by no few little set-tos between Catholic authorities and Orthodox authorities, who were both quite intent on proselytizing those lands. That's why you wind up with like Serbs and Croats at each other's throats, because they landed on different sides of the same coin.
Well, I think it was Ivan who sent out three emissaries. One was to the Muslims, one was to the Roman Catholics, and one was to the Byzantine churches, which would be the official church of the Russian Empire. And it was decided, because of the submissiveness of the church to the state, that they chose Russian Orthodoxy. If you look at the buildings, for example, between Western Europe and the Russian Church, the buildings in the Western Church under the Catholic Church are these spires that almost reach toward heaven, like the Tower of Babel. They're beautiful things. But then they wanted, in Russia, a type of dome on the church that would entice God to come to earth, not us try to reach him.
And hence the ogive domes. And yeah.
Right. And so, beautiful things, absolutely beautiful things, just as beautiful as anything I ever
saw. They are far more architecturally similar to the churches such as we understand them. Of course, they were all repurposed to mosques in Constantinople.
Right.
The Blue Mosque, Hagia Sophia.
And the minarets were put up, and of course, you had the sickle replacing the cross in 1453. But nonetheless, it's. I was just wondering about the location of this new statue of Mr. Putin, and I think he would like to be another Tsar. I really do.
Well, I mean, he went to KGB Spook University, and I imagine that's probably a pretty solid education, really.
He was one of the resident terrorists in East Berlin, and he grew up in the KGB. His grandmother or his grandparents were even servants of Lenin. They were very close to the Lenin household. And so there's a direct connection between Putin's forebears and Lenin and his wife Krupskaya. And of course, you know, there's a, what I'm trying to say is there's a, more than just a strange connection there. I mean, there was a direct connection between Lenin and his household and Putin's forebears.
But he has
a direct line there.
But the thing is, Jim, I mean, this is a let's put it this way, that bust would not have gone up without the permission of Vladimir Putin.
Of course not.
And
have you seen his dacha?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure it's not exactly a shack in the woods.
It would surpass Levadia, you know, the old dacha that was held by Nicholas II in its opulence. It's just incredible. Not many people have seen that thing. I have. Not personally, but I've seen documentaries on it. And going back to what is called Pushkin Salo, which was Tsarskoe Salo, now, I'll tell you, Bob, now that was, in its day, a fairyland. I mean, it is the most incredible sight you have ever seen in your life. Egyptian pyramids, all types of architecture from all over the world, plus two palaces, the Alexander Palace, where Nicholas and his family lived, and the Catherine Palace, which was just too big and too opulent for him. But it's just a fascinating country and a fascinating place to see.
Well, the reason I put that particular story in the stack, Jim, is because of the historical direct line. I mean, it's not that, you know, Putin does not want to be the head of a reformed Soviet state. That may be what he was raised up under, but he's liking him some capitalism. But his real nature, I think, is more in the way of seeing himself as a modern descendant of the Caesars.
I would like to think that he is going to establish not the USSR, but the Russian Empire.
That's his goal.
And he would like to see all of the former children that were wrenched away from it back in the early 90s gathered back under the fold of St. Petersburg.
And I'm pretty sure if Estonia and Latvia and Ukraine and Belarus, you don't want to be that. You don't want to be reassimilated.
Well, perhaps so, perhaps not.
I think the interesting inquiry here, we were just talking about the fact that the man is not stupid. The interesting inquiry here is the notion that he would have dreams of revivified empire, when in fact the very nature of empire, all of them, is collapse. Empire is a step toward collapse.
Well, there are a lot of people who don't want to listen to that lesson in history, and, you know, that may be his object, and that may be what he wants.
He may be another one of those après-moi le déluge types.
Well, I mean, I'm sure he would like to have a Russia have its former 15 time zones as to the present 11 existing time zones, and I'll leave it at that. And it's just a vacuum since the fall of the former Soviet Union into which lots of things are going to be attracted. I don't know how well these individual republics that have been established have done as opposed to the way that they were. I know there are a lot of people who would say it was better under the former system than under the current system, depending on where you live and which side of the fence you're on. But Mr. Putin is definitely a very formidable ally we could have, and he's a very smart man, and he's no fool, and he doesn't fool gladly, and also, I would not like to be in his way as an impedance.
No, and hence I think the manifest stupidity of us having whatever we're calling ourselves, military advisors, trainers, it matters little, in Ukraine.
Yeah, the fact that we have 300 people there in the Ukraine, that is definitely fishy in troubled waters. We don't need to be there. That is their area. You know, it's their sphere of influence. I mean, you know, geographically, it's there. They're right next to each other. And there have been a lot of problems between Ukrainians and Russians, the great and the little Russians and stuff like that. But nonetheless, it's a lot closer for them than our endeavors in the middle and Iraq, and least East and Iraq are. I mean, you've seen what happened in that business today with our efforts to try to maintain this thing against ISIS. ISIS took that huge city.
Crete, yeah.
Ramallah or something like that.
Yeah. And of course they are dismantling the ancient past. That gets under my skin in a big way, but.
Does indeed. I'll tell you one thing. Our efforts to establish any type of hegemony over there have just failed miserably. And now they're calling, as the only solution to try to take it back. It will not be by naval power or air power, but it will have to be by boots on the ground. And how much more blood and treasure going to pour into that?
It's and you know, beyond the Middle East, there's also the larger question of, you know, you were talking about spheres of influence, Jim. The fact of the matter is, how does the United States, not a gang of hypocrites, by criticizing whatever territorial designs he may have on the neighborhood over there, when in fact, since the early 19th century, we have maintained a little something called the Monroe Doctrine in the United States, in which we have said, hey, this entire hemisphere is ours.
That's right.
When you get right down to it, the Monroe Doctrine is the foundation of the conflict that was the Cuban Missile Crisis. Thou shalt not invade our sphere of influence.
Well, that was established, and of course Maximilian learned the hard way about that when they tried to establish the European empire in Mexico. You saw how that went by the way of the sword and the pistol, and but they are the same. I mean, you know, we wish to establish our own hegemony in the Western Hemisphere, South America, places like that, just as Mr. Putin has wanted to reestablish not a continuous, but an absolutely contiguous sphere of land, and that's what he's intending to do. I can't say whether I support it or I don't support it. I just follow it. And I say, you know, we're pretty much getting back to where we were back in 1914 in a way. And but I do believe that eventually, if Mr. Putin is successful, he will absorb as many of those little republics that aren't doing very well. They're not. And try to establish his own hegemony, i.e. the old Russian Empire. I mean, that's what they've always wanted. That's what they had. You know, it's hard to give up something once you've had it. And eventually, I believe he will probably be really reasonably successful. I really do. And instead of trying to tickle his nose by having 300 people in the Ukraine, which, you know, about the history of the Ukraine and the fascists and stuff like that, I would like to see us come to some type of rough or small with Mr. Putin and try to work things out. You know, he could be a worthy asset to America. He really could be. And I'm just looking back with, I guess, a certain degree of not so much some nostalgia, but at least nostalgia to the former detente and rapprochement that we had with the Soviets. And it just made me feel safer to go to sleep at night. And the world was something of a better place. And maybe I'm all wrong. And there are a lot of people out there who probably don't agree with me. But that's just basically what came to mind when you mentioned the establishment of this particular bust of Mr. Putin. And like I say, he would perhaps like to be a new czar with a new empire. And believe you me, they know how to hold an empire together. Unless, of course, something catastrophic comes upon them. Of course, catastrophic things come on all empires because they're built with human beings who have an expiration date. And every state, every organization in the exercise of human endeavor always has an expiration date, Bob, in my opinion.
Well, that's why I said what I said about empires, Jim. They don't last. The minute you inaugurate one, they begin to fall apart. I mean, consider, what was it, 1884, when the powers of Europe gathered together to try to peacefully decide how they would colonize Africa?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well,
and,
I mean,
and there was going to be a German zone, and there was going to be a French zone, and there was going to be a Italian zone.
Yeah, in graduate school, I had a textbook that was given to me. It was not a textbook, but it was part of the prospectus. It was called Burdens of Empire by Gann and Dwiggin. And it dealt with the spheres of influence that the respective European powers would have in the continent of Africa. And, and of course...
I mean, look at... And in many ways, you can make an argument that that conference is kind of the beginning of the end of all those European ambitions, and they all get washed away in a sea of blood in 1914. But my God, look at the mischief the Belgians wrought in the Congo. I mean, that was a genocide in every sense of the word.
Yes, it was pretty bad.
It did not get
any better with some of the things that came after the successor states. I mean, look in Uganda with Idi Amin. Good God. And look at some of the other states in Africa in which horrors were perpetrated. I'm not trying to argue for any side or whatever, but all I'm saying is Africa has definitely had its problems. I mean, who was it? Gaddafi wanted to be he wanted to have the United States for Africa. Wasn't that his ambition?
I do believe.
Didn't work out too well. And, of course, the area of that part of the world is so impoverished and so diseased and... it's just, it's absolutely heart-wrenching. It really is to see what is happening there with the people. And but nonetheless, I digress. But I just wanted to point out another movie I'd like to recommend, and it's called Bessie.
Folks, we're talking about that in the chat room earlier.
Bessie Smith with Queen Latifah. Now, that lady could sing and was a forerunner of a lot of wonderful entertainers and people of significant importance in every realm. Billie Holiday, Lena Horne, Ethel Waters.
That does sound good. Very good.
I have taken too much of your time, and I'm going to let you go because you got loads to lift and no time to drift, right?
Well, something like that, but no, you didn't take up too much time at all, Jim. I hope you have yourself a good evening. We had a little storm come through here, but it seems to have blown away, so hopefully the Internet will stay up tonight.
Same here. It got real dark here.
Well, did your infrastructure stuff get sorted?
Sir?
Did your infrastructure stuff get sorted?
Who knows? It goes
is the, is the water running again, Jim?
Yeah, the water's running.
The water's running, but the trains aren't. You know, welcome to the United States.
There you go. I'm going to have to call Benito's daughter and see what she can do about getting the trains running on time. And then I'm going to have to, let's see, if I can conjure up Ramesses II, maybe he can pour some sacred water into the Nile and the waters will turn clear again instead of run with blood. Who knows?
Now, all I can say is stay out of the frogs and locusts, will you?
All I can say is I keep my cell phone and my Red Cross light handy, and I try to keep as much water as I can for yours truly and my two beasties, and so we can not have to go with thirst under any more plagues of AEP and water or the poisoning thereof, you know, honestly. So you take care, and let's hope our infrastructure will maintain. But we've got some dicey weather ahead this week, I
know. It does look like it, yeah. I mean, that was coming down good earlier. At this point, this is what our friends out west would refer to as precipitation porn, Jim.
I just wish they could get some of this rain in California. I really do, because that's really going to be a drastic situation there.
More and more and more. Yeah, and by the way, the chairman of Nestle has now said that he would bottle more water in California if he only could.
Well, sure, that's more money in his pocket. I mean, and this bottled water thing, and I'm not trying to prolong this conversation beyond its limits, but I just wonder exactly if that's just not pure old tap water.
Sure it is.
That's all it is.
I mean, you can read the labels. Wait a second. Hang on. I got a jug. This stuff happens to be distilled. Municipal source, Muhlenberg Township Authority. Processed by steam distillation, micron filtration, ultraviolet light, osmotion. Yeah. Muhlenberg, Pennsylvania.
Well, maybe they have some type of person over there who can bless it and make it nice. What can I say? And I've said too much already.
All right, Jim, you have yourself a good evening.
Likewise.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Jim calling from the crumbling infrastructure that is not too far away from here at all. We're about halfway through the program this evening. And, well, lots and lots and lots more morons. You remember when America went absolutely sprayed roach crazy over Janet Jackson's Nipple O'Doom? Mm-hmm. Well, it's happened again. Only this one wasn't a real nipple. These were sort of, some of them were even disembodied nipples, in a painting. Mm-hmm. No, really. It turns out that, was it Christie's that auctioned off Les Femmes d'Auger? Auger? My French, it sucketh. Les Femmes d'Alger, Women of Algiers. It went, Christie's Auction House, last Monday, auctioned it off by Pablo Picasso. He works down to the Rippy Mart down there, Pablo does. Pablo Picasso. It went for $179.4 million. And it has cubist elements to it, meaning that they're straight lines and angles and things like that. Les Femmes d'Alger, if I'm saying it correctly, has, let me see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I think, yeah, 6, yeah, I think that's what, 7, 8. It has 8 breasts, complete with 8 cubist little nipples in it. And when they got around to talking about it on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, they blurred the image. Maybe it was, but then again, maybe it wasn't because of the breastuses, because I think there are things that could arguably be either a really big comma or Botox involved. Mm-hmm. Because at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, they deemed that the all the breastuses were way too dicey, racy even, for the nonagenarians who watch Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Mm-hmm. It was risque, if you will. Jerry Seitz. Jerry Seitz is an art critic, and he said, how sexually sick are conservatives in Fox News? They blurred parts of the Picasso painting. Well, no, I'll be dipped. Okay, there it is. No, they did not blur out the Botox. They only blurred out the breastuses of doom. The Sydney Morning Herald had the story. Salts, not Sites, I guess. Salts said, the Sydney Morning Herald reported, his consternation was echoed across various other Twitter users who labeled the move bizarre and pathetic, with one user including the hashtag #FreeTheNipple, referencing the recent campaign against censorship of the female form. God's... Some of the nipples aren't even attached to people. Not that you can tell.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Yeah, 8. 8 breastuses. And, well, somebody needs to explain to Roger Ailes that Picasso's blue period does not refer to that period of time that he spent telling dirty jokes. Honest to God. Greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. Ain't it? Ain't it just? Then again, maybe there's a reason they didn't blur out the asses. If Fox News started blurring out asses, all of their news anchors would be pixelated.
Jesus.
And then this. Do please to be getting ready for the announcement of the announcement of the decade. We have had a communique from the ancestral stomping grounds of the Grahams down there on their plantation, the smoldering chode.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They put out a press release because Lindsay was taking his Be Afraid, Be Very Afraid tour up to Iowa, Stan.
Yes.
Lindsay wants everybody to know. Hold me, John! But he is going to be so tough, 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 tough. Oh, mercy sakes, he is going to be tough on them ISIS. Yes, he is. I mean, the petticoats are starched, and the drapes there at Smoldering Chode have been turned into a lovely gown for the barbecue at Fair Oaks. And Lindsay is showing that he is downright butch when he has to be. He said just the other day in Iowa, Stan, he said, if I'm president of the United States and you're thinking about joining Al-Qaeda or ISIL, anybody thinking about that? I'm not going to call a judge. I'm going to call a drone, and we will kill you.
No, really.
Lindsay's going to kill all them ISIL. Every last one of them, I tell you. He was out there, and I always stand at the Iowa Republican Party's Lincoln Day dinner. That's good enough, but, I mean, they serve a bunch of Midwestern kind of food. It ain't nothing like the shrimp and grits you can get down there to Smolder and Chode when they put on the big barbecue every spring. No, nothing. Oh, and he had a word for our veterans, Lindsay did. He did. Because now all of a sudden, all these Republicans is having a dickens of a time trying to sort out what it was that we done in Iraq and whether or not it was wrong to do it and was it a mistake. And poor little John Ellis Bush, dem leader's baby brother, somebody's been hot footing him and tying his shoelaces together over Iraq, and he keeps having to make up things like, I misheard the question about knowing if we knew what we know now, would you still go into Iraq? And he said, yes, I would, and so would that Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Lindsay is having none of that. No, 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 no. Did you know Lindsay travels with his own fainting couch? He does. But there in Iowa Wasteland, he clarified his position. That's what he and John call it, John McCain. He clarified his position on the Iraq, and he spoke to veterans who went to Iraq just like he didn't. And he said, if you fought in Iraq, it's not your fault it's going to hell. It's Obama's fault. The person I blame is Barack Obama, not George W. Bush. Did I mention that while he was in... It didn't appear in the notes from the actual coverage of the event, but he could be seen, according to sources, he could be seen when he said, if I'm president of the United States and you're thinking about joining Al-Qaeda or ISIL, anybody think about that? I'm not going to call a judge. I'm going to call a drone, and we will kill you. Yes. He was clutching. Oh, mercy sakes, he was clutching them pearls. Oh! Just about broke a strand. He did. Welcome to the Coward Nation, COWERED, with Chief Coward, Lindsey Graham. Alrighty then, let's go over and talk to our buddy, the Angry Indian. Hey, Angry.
Hey, Brother Bob. What's going on?
What's happening, man?
Reading about Waco and, you know, trying to figure out why these upstanding citizens are not being called thugs, are not being called menaces to society, are not, you know, their parentage is not being questioned.
I was wondering if the police felt like a little child. And
well,
the,
I'll tell you this.
You know, like Darren Wilson did.
Well, I don't know. But, you know, in that particular case, you're law enforcement. You show up in the middle of a multi-organizational dispute where, you know, gunfire is being exchanged. People are being stabbed and sliced. Punched, kicked. You show up on the scene, and they turn and start shooting at you. Which, you know,
Hold up. There's one. I mean, I think we may have something out of order there, Angry. Mm-hmm. According to the police, they had word that this was going to go down, so they were already there.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, I mean, that means that they were waiting for somebody to give them the order to fire.
Well, sure. But what does that mean? Because when this gets into a court of law, what they're going to say is that this organization or these organizations, right, started going after each other. And when we popped up and said, hey, 5-0, and then they started shooting at us. They're not going to say, oh, well, you were laying in wait and that this is kind of an ambush because, you know, I mean, I'm not going to get upset with cops who are going to set up organized criminal gangs like this. I thought that's what they're supposed to do.
Well, I mean, they were. I mean, that actually had some. I mean, if they were there before it went down to sort of say, look, you know, we're here, don't start any shit. That's actually one of those rare instances of crime prevention, isn't it?
Well, if that's what they're doing, you know. But we don't really know. I mean, so many cops on the take. You know, how do we know that this wasn't a cover-up? We really don't know what the hell it went down. And it's, you know, it's going to come out eventually. I mean, I understand that there's already all kinds of warnings that are going out to the officers from that department now because of this incident. You know, this is not good news. This is really fucking bad. Anybody who knows anything at all about organized motorcycle gangs, you know, say like in Montreal, British Columbia, yeah, you know, it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing, and this is really bad. So, you know, really, you know, cops versus gangsters. I thought that was the way it's supposed to be. You know, I really don't know what to say other than how this is being portrayed in the media, because I got to get up and leave the house tomorrow. And, you know, thug, all of this kind of thing, I have to hear. On the other hand, Fox News is not condemning anybody involved in this. And they're not all white.
Well, see, I was kind of guessing there would at least be some non-pale people involved in that, brawl. Yes, it was a brawl. It was not a battle. It was not a war. It wasn't a gunfight. It was a brawl.
Well, yeah, well, like everything else, that's up to interpretation, right? You know, because like you were relating one particular article, and they talked about what happened, you know, what really went down at the end. They didn't start off like they would have with, say, Baltimore. You know, how was Baltimore handled? How were the pumpkin riots handled? How were the paternal riots handled? How was this being handled? I didn't see these guys being kicked in the face by the cops. You know, I didn't see them. Is anybody's spine broken by the police? Anybody's neck broken? You know, was anyone yelling, I can't breathe, and they were choked out, they were choked to death? You know, I didn't see any of that happen. And we're talking about people who do, you know, some pretty serious fucking crimes. Some pretty serious fucking crimes. And, you know, I mean, look, so goddamn serious that the Houston Chronicle said that the police don't even want to name the groups that were involved. That's how serious this is, because that's how serious people are worried about how this shit can actually reach their motherfucking doorstep. But, you know, here it is. That's a real fucking clear and present threat to the goddamn republic. Where is the media? Where is law enforcement? I know for a fucking fact. I believe I've sent you the details.
Why Waco? Why Waco?
Why not Waco?
I mean, is it Waco because of the branch? I mean, I can't imagine that those are a bunch of Alex Jones listeners on soft tails, you know, rolling in there because of the Branch Davidians.
No, from what I understand, that the town is kind of wide open. You know, Mexico's right there. You got a lot of pipelines for a lot of dope, so there's a lot of money that can be made down there. So whoever can get that, you know, they get the money. This is capitalism in your face. For people who don't understand capitalism, who really don't know what the fuck Adam Smith was trying to warn about.
So was this is this the 2015 equivalent of the battle behind of the five families?
Probably. I wouldn't speculate because I really don't know, because, you know, like I said, they don't really want to officially name exactly who was involved in this. People are looking at mugshots and making rash judgments. You know, I'm just saying that if this shit is getting international, more international than it already fucking is, that's a real serious motherfucking problem. That's a serious problem. And it's a serious problem because you have law enforcement that is concentrated on the African male community. They're concentrated on the Native American community. right? They concentrated on Mexicans, you know, and Mexican immigrants in particular, males. And here it is, and some Filipinos and low Asians and so on. I mean, I can go down the line with the ethnicities in particular regions that get fucked with by the police. They're simply racially profiled. No matter how many goddamn jobs they have, no matter how many fucking bachelor degrees that they're working on and shit, it doesn't matter. In the meantime, you have bike groups that are a major fucking threat in like 30 different countries. You know? Canada, Australia, there are affiliates, there are chapters in different fucking countries. You know, and the mafia never really went away. They're not what they were, but, you know, La Cosa Nostra is still working. And, you know, all of this is still going on. And as long as drugs are illegal, as long as women and children can be trafficked, as long as there's a way to make a profit illegally, these things will continue to go on. And the culture that is being perpetuated, I hate to say this, I know a lot of my brothers and sisters in the rap game don't want to hear this shit, but I'm sorry. You perpetuate this fucking stuff by just pretending that it's fucking music. We, you know, all of this has become mainstream. Pimping has become, well, what the fuck they think is pimping any goddamn way, has become fucking mainstream. All the wrong fucking things have become mainstream. Helping your neighbor, giving a fuck about, you know, the person next door to you, worrying about whether or not the elders are eating, whether or not the water is fit to fucking drink, you know? It's like none of that is really important any motherfucking more. Have a fake ass like Kim Kardashian. Pump yourself up full of fucking chemicals in some goddamn hotel with some, you know, other nutcase who you don't know where they get these goddamn chemicals from. You know, this is what we're focused on. And whether or not Bruce Jenner is going to go through a full transition this year or next year. We really need to be worrying about how the fuck, we're going to survive when the fucking, you know, society is collapsing around us. When you see crime developing to this motherfucking level, that's a problem. I mean, I'm quoting the police officer down there. He said, in all my years of being a professional lawman,
he had never seen anything like it.
But they're worried about me and my other black brothers when we're trying to go to fuck to work in the morning. See?
Well, see, I saw a little video. I saw a little video over the weekend on my Facebook page. And it was quite telling. It was a tale of two open carries. And in one, a white dude with his head shaved is just walking around waiting for the police to come and stop him and ask him why he's carrying a rifle, because it gives him a constitutional stiffy to say, because it is my right under the Second Amendment, for I am protecting freedom. Right? And that's exactly what happens. The cop comes up and says, why are you carrying? Because it's my right. He says, can I see your ID? No, you cannot. Why not? Because it is my right not to give you. Okay. They go away. Then there's the brother who is walking down the streets, got some cornrows going on. Yeah. Got the very same goddamn rifle slung over his shoulder, AR-15. And a roller pulls up and in that kind of catty-cornered position they take now because it's some sort of, I don't know, counterinsurgency cop driving or whatever. Cop jumps out of the car, stays behind his door, levels his weapon at the dude and says, get on the ground! Brother gets on the ground. And ain't none of that, you know, give me your ID or, you know, I'm doing this for it is my right. You black dude with a gun. Because, you know, white skinheads with guns can be trusted. I mean, it's there. I mean, scroll down, you'll find it. And they were both setups, okay? They were both cases of guys walking with openly carried semi-automatic assault rifles under similar circumstances, only one's black and one's white. And the police response could not have been more profoundly different.
Well, welcome to America. I mean, it's always been that goddamn way. I mean, you know how many times,
I want this notion, Angry, that we're having some sort of esoteric, arcane legal argument about firearms is bullshit, because it's kind of like Dr. Bill was talking about right to work earlier today. And both of these things share a commonality. The Second Amendment and right to work laws are both born out of a plantation mentality to prevent people of color from developing agencies. You know, the Second Amendment was drafted to empower slave hunters. Okay? Operating under color of state law. And right to work laws came along when unions began to get a toehold in this country to make sure none of the wrong colored people would get uppity in the South and think they were going to unionize. It's the same.
Well, hell, man, you had a doing Reconstruction. You had a black sheriff. I forgot where he was elected. He was elected because it was a black majority, right? Well, I don't know how many white men were waiting for him the first day he showed up. He and his white deputy, they were disarmed and just told, you what, done. Not going to happen. I mean, how many people was it? The Congress or the Senate, whatever? They were armed motherfuckers there, wouldn't let them take their seats. So, you know, I mean, it's always been this way. But again, you know, I really have to stress this because I'm not hearing it anyplace else. You know, I mean, you pointed out that these men and women are not being called thugs. You know, that they're not being, you know, their humanity at this point isn't being questioned. I mean, this is being called a ruckus, a brawl, a fist fight that got out of hand. I mean, there were 9 fatalities. The police and the Houston Chronicle saying that there's blood every goddamn where, pretty much. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, no, all of that. Yeah, all that's in the news reports.
That there were still bodies laying out when the news stations got there. You know, I mean, this was hours after the fact. And one of the things I saw said they're still under high alert in the whole area because they still think there's going to be retaliation of some sort because they recognize that there's a major fucking gang war going on in their goddamn little town that already has a bad reputation. Because of the Branch Davidians, you know, and the whole idea of guns and that bit and how the authorities ended up dealing with that. And the whole controversies and conspiracy theories that came around about how that was dealt with, right? Because, I haven't looked at Alice Jones yet because I just can't stomach it today. You know, but I mean...
Oh, God, you're going to make me take one for the team, aren't you?
Well, somebody's got to do it. You know, I mean, we can't talk shit about him until we actually know what the fuck he said. Because we're not him.
Here we go. It'll load in a minute.
Which is exactly why I say when you put one of us, I don't give a fuck who it is. You, Malloy, Bill Press, Rapblog, any other podcaster I can fucking name, you know, Black Agenda Report. You put all of us in one goddamn market, we will rule the fucking market because we work with facts. These sons of bitches, they're probably already saying, because you already know the white supremacists are saying it's a goddamn conspiracy theory. Or they're trying to take our guns, so they had to do this. Because how many weapons did they find with these fellows? And their mamas? They said there was weapons all
134 was the number I saw. Okay, so I went over there. Leftists exploit biker bloodbath to complain about white privilege. Liberals want National Guard on Waco streets in the name of equality. And it's all, yeah, and it's because some booger eater saw a meme on Facebook that said, 9 people die in a mass shootout between skinhead gangs, no mass arrests, no tear gas, no National Guard, no one calling them thugs.
Yep. Welcome to the world that I live in, dealing with fascism, you know, and trying to explain to folks. You think fascism is a joke? You think it's just about white folks and Germans? No, you're wrong, you know. It's about capitalism at its motherfucking extremes. And when gangsters get into disputes, this is what happens. Because there is no such thing as, okay, you got your turf and I got mine. It's about goddamn domination. We're watching what the fuck is going on right now. It's about superpower. There can only be one, right? There can only be one. You know, the Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore. You know, and even though Putin, he's ex-KGB, I mean, they just put up a statue to this motherfucker, right? I mean, and what was it? The Cossacks. The fucking Cossacks. I mean, you know, these folks, and I'm not trying to insult them or anything. They have a hell of a long tradition, and, you know, that should be respected. But they're not living in the 21st century. And I've been hearing about, you know, fascist murmurs, you know, up in the Caucasus and what have you, because a lot of that came out when the whole Boston event went down. when I heard the name Tamerlan, I'm like, no, that's just...
No, see, that way back when that went down, that was the first thing we looked at. We looked, you know, who, Tamerlan Tsarnaev, who was his namesake?
Who's Tamerlan, right?
Yeah.
Whoa. But yeah, I mean, and I was like, nah, he must have named himself that. You know, then when you find out that was his
name...
Nope,
Mama named him that.
Whoa.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, you know. But then you find out what? They said that they didn't know anything about them. And then it turns out that they've been, you know, kind of in contact, talking to his family, harassing his, whatever the case may be, for several years before this happened. So when you say that they knew, that the authorities knew that there was going to be some kind of, sit-down or whatever the hell, you know, with these folks over in this lot. I mean, you have gang experts all over the fucking country. Texas has their own goddamn gang experts. I mean, this is publicly available information for the most part. And, you know, of course they knew. They had to have goddamn known. Did they think it was going to get like that, though? Probably not.
Well,
you know,
but for their own safety.
You
yeah,
know.
But see, that's the thing. We don't know the degree to which this was exacerbated by the police because there are 9 people dead, but police killed some of them.
Well, they probably had to, you know. That's the point that I'm making, and I'm not pro police at all. You know, I mean, when they do their
job. That's not my point either. They were shooting at the cops, and the cops were shooting back. But I'm betting here, the cops are probably better shots than the skinhead messed up bikers are.
Oh, for damn sure, we're paying for it.
You know. And just to give you an idea, I mentioned this meme that's making its way around Twitter. A picture truly is worth 1,000 words, or at least 140 characters. Because all the arrested biker gang guys are sitting there, and they got their leather vests on and their blue jeans, and here's a guy, and he's sitting down, and he's checking his fucking social media feed. I kid you not.
Are you... Really?
Yeah, he's just been arrested. None of these guys are in handcuffs. None of these none of these people have been maced. None of these white folks have been tased. Okay? The guy who's guarding them has his back turned to them and his assault weapon pointed straight down at the pavement. And if he had to, he couldn't get that firearm up in time enough to save his own skin. But there in the middle of the photo, a dude who has actually not shaved his head is holding his phone and checking his social media feed.
Where he could be setting them up for what, you know? And he was allowed to do that, right?
Yeah.
So if that's on video, if that's a photo, whatever the hell, everybody should be putting that out there to say, what the fuck? Walter Scott. Eric Garner, what the fuck? Okay? The way that they go through black communities, the way that they went through Baltimore, where the hell is SWAT? Did they call the National Guard down to Waco yet?
Well, see, that's what Kit Daniels at Infowars.com is complaining about. Leftist social justice warriors are blaming white privilege for the lack of National Guard troops on Waco, Texas streets. In response to the gun battle between rival biker gangs and police, which left 9 dead on Sunday, despite the fact that the police were already monitoring the gangs at the Twin Peaks restaurant before the shootings, which entirely took place at the restaurant, not Waco at large, and likely lasted only minutes, social justice warriors are using the Waco Thugs hashtag to complain about how the city isn't under a complete lockdown with curfews and National Guard troops patrolling the streets. In other words, leftists are actually promoting a police state in the name of equality. Which this goober completely does not understand. It's not that they should be there. The question is, why do they wind up in Ferguson? Why are there snipers in Ferguson? Baltimore? On and on. Why?
Yeah, but Brother Bob, you know why. And that's why he said it exactly the way he did. You see, when you do it, and we talked about this earlier, and yeah, you know, somebody's not going to like my language, but you know what, that's just too motherfucking bad. When you're doing it to niggas, it's okay. when you're doing it to Indians who get mad with the white man because they've been pissed on too fucking much, too goddamn many times, in fucking Marine fucking Corps uniforms, yeah, then you call in the motherfucking big guns like you do in 1973 and wounded fucking knee. Yeah, you know, see, that's what happens. You see, when Mexicans get mad and say, well, hey, we're over here cleaning your fucking gardens and cleaning your goddamn toilets, but when we're marching with our children in a fucking public park for our fucking rights, you beat the shit out of us and mace us. But when white folks get like this, well, goddamn, what do we need to do? Well, we need to protect ourselves, but, hey, let's not get wild. You know, it was just a brawl. It's just some bikers, you know, that they probably had a beer too many, and, you know, they had a dispute over some bullshit. They'll work it out. We'll work it out. You know, it's just kind of bad, but we'll move past this. That's what they said when that kid dressed up like a fucking freak and went in and shot up a fucking movie theater. Oh, we got to think about his mental state, his poor parents. Oh, my God. You know, what are we going to do? When it's Baltimore because people are pissed off because, you know, folks are just being murdered by the goddamn police at will. Well, these niggas just need to fucking stay where the fuck, you know, I mean.
Okay, you know, so have you ever heard of, and it's okay if you haven't, have you ever heard of Duke University Professor Jerry Huff, angry?
Let me see. I've heard of Duke University, and
probably
that
not.
Name kind of sounds familiar.
No, I don't know what he's a professor of, but he's a professor at Duke University, which is, you know, not a shabby little institution.
Nope.
And somehow or another, nobody ever calls their basketball players thugs, even though they quietly go. But never mind. So Duke University Professor Jerry Huff was sitting and drinking his coffee one morning when he read an article, an editorial in the New York Times. The editorial in the New York Times was called How Racism Doomed Baltimore. All right? With me? Sure.
I'm with you.
It was in the Sunday Review. It was by the New York Times editorial board. And they wrote, the Baltimore riots threw a spotlight on the poverty and isolation of the African-American community where the unrest began last month. The problems were underscored on Friday when the Justice Department, in response to Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake's request, started an investigation of the police department, which is an egregious history of brutality and misconduct. Yada, yada, yada. Oh, by the way, no, we know what he's a professor of. He's not a professor of basket weaving. Jerry Huff is not a professor of speech and theater. He's not an English professor or of classical antiquity. No, 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 no. Jerry Huff is the James B. Duke Professor of Political Science, okay? So he's reading his New York Times, and that editorial just got all under his skin. And so he started commenting. You got your hockey puck handy, angry?
Yeah.
The blacks get symbolic recognition in an utterly incompetent mayor who handled this so badly from beginning to end that her resignation would be demanded if she were white. The blacks get awful editorials like this that tell them to feel sorry for themselves. And then he starts saying, compare that with the Asians. They didn't feel sorry for themselves, but worked doubly hard. I am a professor at Duke University. Every Asian student has a very simple old American first name that symbolizes their desire for integration. Virtually every black has a strange new name that symbolizes their lack of desire for integration. It was appropriate that a Chinese design won the competition for the Martin Luther King statue. King helped them overcome. The blacks followed Malcolm X.
Yeah, I've heard it all before. I've heard it all before. And then you can point to Bill
Jesus
Cosby.
God, how much do you reckon you make if you're the James B. Duke tenured chair, endowed professor of political science at Duke? I mean, can we just close the Duke political science department now before they do any more harm? What did this guy just do to the value of every Duke political science degree wandering around out there?
Oh, he didn't do nothing, you know, and because he's not the only one. He's just the one of the moment. I mean, David Brooks will write something that is so goddamn racially fucking offensive that it's unreal to either, you know, African people, Native folks, Palestinians, and, you know, absolutely nothing happens because nobody really gives a goddamn.
So look for this dude angry to be the latest white martyr of the week or of the moment.
I'm looking at somebody now. John Caudillo. He's complaining. Well, what is he saying here? Texas cops gunned down motorcyclists, and he's basically saying that they were murdered by the police. That this was a setup by the police.
Well, there it is. There's your false flag.
And I see the photograph that you're talking about. There's two of them that are on their goddamn cell phones, and nobody's cuffed. They're sitting there very fucking calm. There's no guns in their fucking faces. Nobody's getting their neck cranked. Nobody's, you know.
Yeah, you'll know. Yeah, but there's no. There were people who were darker than that, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm not naming anybody, but one of those groups is not really, it's a very mixed organization. So, and it's primarily, you know, Spanish-speaking folks. Mostly mixed. So it's not clearly a race thing. But that does not mean that racism isn't involved in this world. The MC world is racist.
Well, look at the sheriff's deputy or whoever he is who's guarding them. Weapon pointed down with his back turned to them.
You do some bullshit like that.
How many times in Ferguson or Baltimore did you see any cops with their backs turned to anybody?
Hell fucking no.
But that is an element of privilege, Angry. It's presumptive privilege.
You know, well, let's just put it this way. I can give you two examples. That come to mind looking at this photograph here. This is John Caudillo, whoever the fuck he is, and I guess he's one of these self-righteous white supremacists out here. But I'm looking at this, and World War II comes to mind, because a lot of people don't know this. You know, after World War II, I found this out eventually, you know, from my mother at first, that they had a lot of, Nazi and Wehrmacht officers that were being held in Idaho. And I believe some in Wisconsin.
And we held a bunch in West Virginia. We set them up at the Greenbrier.
Hmm. Well, how did they treat them down there? Because the ones that I'm talking about, they were allowed to grow their own hops for beer.
Oh yeah, no. It was a cushy ride.
Yeah, they sold the beer in town, right? They had women. They were able to keep the money that they earned. You know, their rank was respected. They ate in the officers' mess, what I found out later on doing my own research. And I'm just like, wait a goddamn minute. And then I asked, you know, an older man who had served in Korea. I said, can you explain this to me? I said, I'm just going to ask you. You're a white American. How does this make any goddamn sense to you? And I told him the story. And I said, yeah, you know, Africans were not even allowed in like two-thirds of the base, I understand. And you know, of service people. And he was like, look, man, you know what the hell it is. They were able to say, okay, white dude, because how many people here are German? And I'm like, I don't understand what you mean. He goes, look, I'm German. He goes, a quarter of the Europeans in the United States are of German descent. And many of us recognize that. And where they were, Idaho. Think about what you just told me, he said. You know, Idaho, Wyoming, there's a lot of Germans there. So they weren't going to be necessarily antagonistic to them because, well, hell, they were the same. Even though they were the enemy, they were the same. Right? And it's the same thing when you talk about the gang bit. They are white gangs. There always have been white gangs. And I'm not just talking about suit-wearing gangsters. I'm talking about street gangs in this country. They always...
Well, sure. Bill, on any given evening when Bill calls up, he can tell you about the gangs that existed when he was a kid growing up in Cleveland. And they weren't...
Oh, yeah. Cleveland, Ohio, for sure, yeah.
Yeah. Just to go back for a minute to our buddy here at Duke University, because this is just precious. So after he posts this stuff, and after Duke University gets after him, Duke Vice President for Public Affairs and Government Affairs Michael Schoenfeld described Professor Huff's comments as noxious, offensive, and have no place in civil discourse. Duke University has a deeply held commitment. You know, this is just administrative speak. Duke University has a deeply held commitment to inclusiveness, grounded in respect for all, and we encourage our community to speak out when they feel that those ideals are challenged or undermined, as they were in this case. So then WTVD, a television station, of course, reaches out to Professor Huff And Professor Huff, who is old and cranky and white, emailed back. And this is where this is like a little tiny case study in white privilege, because he doesn't understand angry. He's completely clueless. He doesn't see how any of his comments about the black were offensive. I am, of course, strongly against the toleration of racial discrimination. I do not know what racial intolerance means in modern code words and hesitate to comment on that specific comment. See, that's the thing. He's a victim of modern code words, which is another way of saying politically correct. And whenever you hear some right-wing Republican birther, deather, ninth or tenth or bagger, booger eater, bircher say politically correct or code words, you know that they have been called on their shit. In writing
me. They know what the fuck they're talking about.
And he continues, in writing me, no one has said I was wrong, just racist. How many hours could we do on that, Angry? No one has said I was wrong, just racist.
Hey, Dr. David Duke says that shit every week from his fucking radio show, wherever the fuck he is in the world, because he's getting kicked out of different European countries and shit, and he has to bounce. Because nobody fucking wants his ass over there.
Well,
you know?
But I mean, really, no, time out. No one has said that I was wrong, just racist. So
he doesn't
see being racist as being co-equal with being wrong.
But Brother Bob, I have to disagree with you there. He's fucking a big time motherfucker at Duke University, which really shouldn't mean anything, but in this case it kind of does. How the fuck can he not know? This is an argument that the fascists have always made. You can't say that I'm wrong, because look at the statistical facts. The niggas are crazy. The Mexicans make too many babies. The Jews own all of the banks. I don't have any proof for that, but you know I'm telling the truth. So what you're really saying is, I'm a bigot. You're not saying that I'm wrong, you're saying that I'm a bigot. They've been saying that bullshit for decades. It's not new.
Well, he continued, because he did not understand the first law of Holes. He said, I am strongly against the obsession with sensitivity. The more we have emphasized sensitivity in recent years, the worse race relations have become. In my opinion, the time has come to stop talking incessantly about race relations in general terms, as the president and activists have advocated, but talk about how the Asians and Poles got ahead and to copy their approach. I don't see why that is insensitive or racist.
As I said, I've heard all of this before. He knows exactly what the hell he's saying.
He's making a backhanded eugenic argument.
Yeah.
I mean, this is Charles Murray. Charles Murray has a new book coming out, by the way. The Bell Curve guy?
Yeah, because Jeb Bush has been pumping him and then saying, oh, I misunderstood the question, like he did.
He's got a new book coming out. And, of course, Charles Murray is the one who sort of gave scholastic cover to all of these Klansmen and birchers and Concerned Citizens Council types who want to argue that, well, you know, it is not at all surprising that blacks lag behind whites in terms of achievement in this country, because, after all, they're blacks. You know, circular reasoning. This guy feels put upon angry when someone calls him on his bullshit.
But of course they do. Like I said, Bob, you know, you're a nice cool cat, man. You've never really dealt with evil like this, I guess, face to face. You know, because I've tried to reason with these suckers, and I'm talking about actually trying to reason with them, because they, you know, they have their intellectuals, and they like to debate people of color that they think, you know, somehow are a challenge and shit. And I've been tapped with these motherfuckers, and when you sit and you talk to them, they always come off with that, well, you know, it's a fact. It's a fact. Blah, 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 blah. It's a fact. The white man can't speak. If we say anything, you want to cut my throat right now. And I just let them go ahead and go through all their bullshit. And it's like, are you done? Okay. You're saying that, you know, by the rate that you're discussing this, there's 1,000 white people being killed a day since Reconstruction. Do you have any evidence of this? And then, you know, it just goes on to, I don't believe him, and then, you know, God is on his side, and Jesus is a white man, and then, you know, this goes into the stratosphere of bullshit. He knows exactly what he's saying, and we give these fuckers a pass by letting them get off with that. Well, maybe we misunderstand them, because that perpetuates their argument.
Ain't no misunderstanding. Ain't no misunderstanding that dude. He is saying that the black community should shut up, you know, boy, and take it.
Well, of course. But the way that he's framing this, the argument that he's framing, that, well, I may not be right. No, not that I'm right. You can't say that I'm wrong, but, you know, I'm a racist, blah, 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 blah. That is to perpetuate the motherfucking argument, because then the discussion gets into, well, is he right? Maybe we should hear him out. Hey, fairness doctrine. We have to listen to what he says. And if we don't listen to a fucker like this, if we don't listen to a bastard like this, then somehow we're wrong. See, we're not allowing them free speech. This is what they've been doing for ages. David Irving, the British motherfucking historical revisionist, who says that Hitler didn't kill anybody, he's been fucking doing this bullshit for decades. He went to prison for it. Because in Europe, they lock you up for this kind of shit. You say that thing didn't happen, they hurt you. They don't fuck around like that. Here? Oh, no. The American Nazi Party has a goddamn lobbying office in fucking Washington, D.C. And this happened under a black president. And nobody gives a motherfucker. So, no, I'm not surprised by any of this. And he knows exactly what the fuck he's doing. He is opening the academic door to the discussion. Especially if you're telling me that Charles Murray's got a new book that he's coming out with. And Jeb Bush just mentioned that one of his favorite authors is Charles Murray. They're starting the fucking wheels. They're starting the argument. If Duke University can get away with saying this kind of bullshit, because he speaks for fucking Duke University, whether he wants to, you know, I mean, of course he knows that, and he's using his position at Duke University to get this shit going. But the point is, fascism is right fucking here. They are now starting to make the academic motherfucking argument on whether or not we really need to deal with invalids that are running around with faulty fucking genetics amongst us, interbreeding amongst us, lowering our IQs, which in turn lowers your goddamn worth as a human being, because, you know, your house isn't worth anything now. You know, this is the mindset that they're instilling in people, and that's the kind of shit that makes concentration camps and fucking ovens possible in the first goddamn place. That's why I'm saying, bro, that, you know, the people who are listening to him may not understand where he's coming from. And they're willing to even give him the time of fucking day because of the way it's being presented to them. But he knows exactly what the fuck he's doing. And he's not the first one, but this evidently is the first salvo to start the academic argument on whether or not we should be identifying African people as motherfucking subhumans. Okay?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what it is. You know, we already got legitimate rape. We already got a woman is no near worth any fucking male, no matter what goddamn ethnicity she is. White women fucking included, because we don't give a fuck about you either. None of you matter. You know, we will prod you if you want to fucking have a medical fucking procedure. Fuck your rights as a woman and as a human being. We're going to fucking do this because we're men and we speak for fucking God. That's part of fascism too.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's in our fucking face. And just because it's multicultural doesn't mean, well, it's not multicultural really. It's just multi-fucking ethnic. Doesn't mean a goddamn thing. There was a whole lot of motherfucking brown, black, and, you know, not so motherfucking yellow people who were working for Bush. And he pointed them out. He said, they say that I'm a racist. I got blacks in my cabinet. I got black, I got, well, minorities in my sub-cabinet. That's what he said. I got blacks in my cabinet. What do you mean I'm a racist? I got darkies all around me, man, on this plantation. What the fuck are you talking about?
There we go.
We pay him. You know, and then there's a lot of darkies that are willing to play along with this shit. Condoleezza Rice has no fucking problem with this. She don't mind. She doesn't mind. Colin Powell didn't mind. Until he started trying to be a little fucking honest, and then you don't hear from Brother Coleman too much any goddamn more, right? But you'll hear from Alan West, though. A fucking war criminal. We'll hear from him.
Yeah, because Sharia law is keeping him from buying a bottle of Pui Fu dipshit at Walmart. Yeah.
Now, speaking of bikers, you mentioned Alan West.
Yeah.
You are aware that he is connected to a certain motorcycle organization that is known as the 1% organization that gets involved in the kind of shit that went down in Waco the other day, right?
Say what?
You didn't know that?
No, what? No. Huh?
Yeah. Look up Alan West Motorcycle Gang.
Oh, yeah. No. Please let this be a joke.
No. No. No, no. No, no. No, no, no. No. They're on film defending him at his rallies. They're on film defending him at his rallies. Bikers who were threatening reporters. Because they didn't feel they were Republican enough and were telling them if they couldn't report a fair story to get away or something could, would happen to them.
The Outlaws?
He's been supported by Alan West. They like the fact that he's a war criminal and doesn't like Arabs. Yeah. They like Alan West. Look, man. Like
yeah, okay, said, here it like, is. The Broward Palm Beach New Times, Alan West says he was in a white supremacist motorcycle gang.
Then he turned around and said that he was just joking, and then it came out later on that a certain bike club gave him a goddamn Harley, that he is, a supposedly quiet member of a fucking bike gang. Now, I'm going to tell you the truth. Now, Governor Jesse Ventura is a Mongol. I don't know if you know that. You can look that up, too. He's admitted to this, and he's never renounced them, by the way, because it came up when he was running for governor in the first place. And, the voters evidently didn't bother them enough, and he went to office. And he's never renounced them, so, if you want some balance, maybe you got him, and then you got Alan West.
Hey, I just can't imagine Alan West having the stones to. Well, that's a bad phrase, but having.
And
the,
yes, you can, because you went to. Come on, Bob, you're an educated man. You went to school. You've met guys like him. They were the black cat that always listened to heavy metal. You know what I mean? He never hung around with the brothers. He always chased around these cats as they made fun of him and called him names and what have you. I know that experience. And it was a phase. I got out of that shit after a while. But see, Alan West never grew the fuck up. You can look at the way that he carries himself. And your black listeners know what the fuck I'm talking about. You can look at the way he carries himself, the way he gets his hair cut, all that bullshit. He lives in a fucking fantasy, man. He wakes up every day angry with the entire fucking world because he's not white. Because he knows that's where the fucking power system is. And he's one of those guys that's just like,
and he thinks if he was just white, then he could be vying with Lindsey Graham to be, oh dear God. Because,
These cats think that if they help out, these white supremacists or what have you, when they start lynching and start tearing people up, that they're not going to be, they're going to get some kind of an exemption. I'm saying that because I was an Uncle Tom for more than half of my goddamn adult life. We can get into a long explanation on why that happened. But, I'm just saying, I understand the fucking mindset. When I look at Obama, when I look at Alan West, when I look at J.C. Watts, when I look at, Michael Steele, I wore those shoes. I know I got a foul mouth and I talk a lot of shit, but I wore those shoes. I've had a lot of, fucking experiences and shit being mixed. And I'm telling you, I know what it's like. And when you meet a cat like that, man, you can't motherfucking turn your back on him. You can't trust him because he will go to the Klan. And say, man, I'm with you. I believe in what you believe in. I'm just like you. I'm sorry that I'm black. I mean, you got that Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson. You can look this up. He's on YouTube. He's known for this. He's famous in the black community for this. He has a piece of audio on his radio show where he thanked America. He thanked white America for slavery. He said, Africa's terrible. You saved us. Said it was a rocky ride, but hell, we're here. Never have anything better than what you got here.
Right, and because, you gave us Christianity. I mean, that's usually the report, isn't it?
Well, you gave us Christianity, you allowed us to read, blah, 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 blah. I mean, they can go on and on. The French do it in Haiti. Thank us for this shit. Thank you the fuck for what? Algeria, the Vietnamese, the French tell them that, right? The Germans are still doing that bullshit in Eastern Africa. Thank us because you have coffee. Coffee is African, you motherfucker. I mean, come on. This is the mindset that Europe is the center of the goddamn world and everything else is just, flotsam, right, that needs to be put into place, you know, the white man's burden that needs to be put into place by a superior white man who, when my people were goddamn, you know, making maps and shit, you know, of the fucking constellations, Europeans weren't even wearing fucking shoes yet. But, you know, that's just the mindset. And instead of looking at humans and say, looking at, you know, how, well, like you and I have had our, you know, somewhat disagreements about guns, germs, and steel. But it's a good starting goddamn point on why people, you know, where they are in the world have what they have. It's not because of their fucking DNA. It's because of the fucking environment, you know, and their ingenuity. And we're all here because of our ancestors fucking, you know, struggled and made something of themselves. But, you know, this bullshit here that we're talking about, these are people who live in fucking fear, Bob. You know, they fear you just as much as they fear me. If they really gave a fuck about white people, how come Appalachia looks the way it does?
Well, I mean, some pigs are more equal than other pigs.
Yeah, because then you start getting into the Scots-Irish shit, you know, which nobody wants to motherfucking talk about. You know, except to make jokes about it, you know, and not really talk about
it. No, I mean, that's why I had that clip Friday night of that jackass Fleming from Louisiana sitting there doing everything in his power to pretend that hillbillies aren't being poisoned up here. And, you know, what the hell if they are? What's another dead hillbilly, more or less, give or take?
Yeah, but see, but they'll use you if they want to make a racial point, if they're trying to start a goddamn race war, to say, oh, well, you know, look what happened to, you know, poor old blonde-headed Billy Sue. And three black boys and took her across the road and did whatever they did to her. You know, now they're telling the Klan they can't have justice. Oh, Jesus, when will it stop? You know, when it's convenient for them, they'll go ahead and they'll do that. But when I've pointed out, hey, you know, in the 1960s, the Black Panther Party actually visited Appalachia and set up a goddamn branch. You know, they called themselves the Patriot Party, the original Patriot Party, not the motherfucking Nazis that popped up in the 80s, the original fucking Patriot Party. And said that they were going to march the goddamn Washington, D.C. to get rights for Appalachian people. Anybody in your area discussing those boys?
Yeah, not really.
They're forgotten, and that's a fucking shame. That's a fucking shame that those people are forgotten because, you know, they stood up when nobody else did. And they said they were completely shocked. Why would these black people want to come up here and talk to us? But then they said the longer that we sat there and spoke to them, the more we realized how much we had in fucking common. And, you know, taught how to set up, you know, food banks and what have you.
Yeah.
You know, and then Dr. King. Remember the original march on Washington, the Poor People's March.
Right.
When he got Appalachia to agree to join that march, that's when Hoover said, wait a goddamn minute. This cannot go on. This cannot continue.
This could become a problem, right?
This could become a
problem. No, but remember, Professor Burke says the blacks followed Malcolm X, because that was all just a bunch of white people standing there in blackface on the Mall, you know, 1963.
Well, Malcolm wasn't there. They wouldn't have had Malcolm there. They wouldn't even let James Baldwin speak. They brought Charlton Heston in, and James Baldwin had flown in from France. You know, and nobody knew who King was outside of the South at that point. You know, I mean, look, I can get into that big time, too. I mean, as much as we, you know, respect the Kennedy brothers, they controlled that whole goddamn thing. Because when Bayard Rustin, who got kicked out of the movement because, one, he was gay, and, two, he was a communist, and refused to apologize for it, and A. Philip Randolph had set that thing up, they had intended to go to the airport over there and lay down on the tarmac and not let any planes take off or land. They were going to take over the airport and they were going to stop all the major highways. That was the original plan for the March on Washington. And then they called up what they called the Big Six, which was Dr. King, Abernathy, and I can't remember who else was there. Andrew Young was there. And said, look, we'll give you $250,000 to tone this down. If you succeed, we'll give you another $250,000. I mean, we know this now. And that's how all of that got quelled out to marches and sandwiches and you know, shaved ice. And everybody went home because that was part of the agreement, that everybody was to be done with this by dusk. And King got killed.
And that's the origin of the modern D.C. protest model. Come in, make speeches, be gone before dark.
Yeah, but what was the original D.C. protest model? It was the fucking Klan.
Well, that or the bonus army.
Well, yeah, but see, I was going to mention the Bonus Army before, because the papers at the time, and I encourage people who give a fuck about the history of their country to go look this up. The last goddamn cavalry charge was led by MacArthur against the Bonus Army, right, against American vets in D.C., which pissed off the reporters at the time, because they didn't like the fact that black soldiers who had served in World War One, that their families were living amongst the Bonus Army. That all of the European immigrants, all the Russians, all the Poles, that everybody was working together. That they had, you know, formed a tent city and had things, you know, pretty well organized, because these were military men. But one of the things that bothered the fuck out of them, and MacArthur said this has to be dealt with, was the fact that there was racial harmony between these people, because they realized that they all had the same fucking problem. They were not being recognized by their government. And they fucking came down on them like a ton of fucking bricks. How many people died doing that? I don't remember.
Offhand, I don't know.
You know. But when I talk about Appalachia, and when you hear Bob and I talk about this stuff, you know, this is what we're talking about. Because we know that this is possible. We know that this is possible. And this is what the fuck they worry about.
Well, see, I put something up on Facebook this past weekend, because Ferg was a young lady's prom date. And so I took some pictures of him, and I just happened to be down at the Hawk's Nest Overlook, where you can look down and see where the town that my grandfather was born in was later drowned because of the water held back by the Hawk's Nest Dam, which was, of course, built by the Union Carbide Corporation. And in the process, they had to build a tunnel, Angry. And they cut a tunnel all the way through Golly Mountain, which is pure sandstone, solid sandstone. Sandstone, and along the way, they hired primarily men of color to dig the tunnel. The white folks were busy mining coal, and Union Carbide probably knew about silicosis. If they didn't before, they learned there, because the official death toll at the time was noted at 109. It's probably, it's now acknowledged to be 500, but by the time you get done with the lasting effects, it's probably up in the thousands. But they were, you know, they were black men. And if they came out and said, boss, I can't breathe down there, they said, that's fine, you're fired, and we'll get somebody else. I mean, that was the reality of it. A little town at the foot of the mountain here, Golly Bridge, became known as the town of the living dead, as black men waited there to die, to have their lungs slowly turned into concrete. It's not a joke. It's real. Real. Concrete. Fine particles of sand breathed in, no respirators, no masks. And the lungs fill up with it. And lungs are wet things. And what is concrete? It's really fine, wet sand. And when it dries, it's harder than some rocks. So I saw that on Saturday. And then yesterday and today, I was on the road. And there's just a little historical marker. Now, first of all, let's understand something. And I mentioned this in the Facebook post. A lot of people have seen it. The historical marker sits on the grounds of a state park, Hawk's Nest, right on U.S. 60. But you know how historical markers are usually along the side of the road, right? Well, you have to pull over, park your car, and walk down the trail to get to the Hawk's Nest Tunnel Disaster Historical Marker. Because the industry still doesn't, industry in this state still does not like to acknowledge the number of people that they have killed along the way. And so you can't just go whizzing by and see something that says Hawk's Nest Tunnel Disaster, because you might stop and you might actually read it, and you might begin to get a little bit of an inkling, Angry, of what has been done to the people of this state and this region in the name of corporate profits. Okay? Now, there's a bit of a denouement, and it happened a few years ago. People began to wonder what happened to all those dead people. Are they just in black cemeteries scattered hither and yon? Where'd they go? Care to guess?
I'm afraid to guess.
Well, a few years back, over near Somersville Lake, a lot of miles away from Gauley Bridge, or the tunnel, or the mountain, they found a mass grave. You know, like you do when you execute people, or you are maybe working on a genocide. They found a mass grave where the bodies of a lot of those black men were unceremoniously dumped and covered up. And it has a historical marker by it. Once again, though, you've got to pull off the highway and actually drive up close enough to read it.
Yeah, but then they can say, well, we didn't hide it. We featured it. Look, there's a sign. It's right there. If it's not big enough, well, then fuck you, you know. But we talked about it. When would you niggas get enough? You know, why do we have to keep bringing up the past? Why can't we move forward?
Yeah, I mean,
Jesus.
Yeah, why can't we just let bygones be bygones? Well, where's the reparations? Now, I'm not talking about reparations for slavery. I'm talking about the millions of dollars that are due to the descendants of these people who were massacred industrially by Union Carbide Corporation. Union Carbide did not pay any sort of a price for what they did in Hawk's Nest any more than they paid any sort of a price for what they did in Bhopal. And up until Bhopal, the digging of the Hawk's Nest Tunnel, Angry, was the single greatest industrial disaster in the world. And it's 5 miles from me. That's where I live. That's my world. That's my reality. And so I get a little bit, because of the nature of my Facebook feed, I get a little pissed off every now and then. Because I'll go to my news feed, and I'll be scroll, 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 and I'll see this picture of these beautiful, majestic mountains and these beautiful pink and purple flowers and these gorgeous, gorgeous goddamn vistas. And it'll say something like, "Wild, wonderful West Virginia, bring your family and see the best-kept secret on the East Coast." And, you know, I'm like a moth to a flame. I immediately hit the comment button. Yeah, come and see the best-kept secret on the East Coast. Come and learn about the 100,000-plus working people massacred for corporate profits. Come on! I'll be your tour guide. You can call me Bob.
Yeah, but they don't want anybody talking about that.
No, that ruins their vacation. They want to ride down the New River Pass, and they'll be told the stories of the charming old ghost towns of the coal company boom era, and they'll go past Thurmond and Glen Jean. Thurmond was so busy once upon a time. One, it had no roads; it was nothing but a railroad town. It was so busy once upon a time that more money, in terms of value, moved through Thurmond than through Pittsburgh, Richmond, and Cincinnati, or Wheeling, combined. And it's a ghost town. And there are old coal tipples, and there are old foundation stones, and crumbling country stores. But you see, I look at those things, and I see the works of hands and days and years. And not to get all biblical on you or anything, but I hear the blood cry out from the ground. Because to this day, that blood has never had justice. And in its time, it goddamn sure never had mercy.
Oh, but who cares about the slaves? I mean, like I told you, my favorite poem is by Bertolt Brecht. You know, the worker reads history. you know, they give, you know, the pharaohs the credit for the pyramids, but who actually built them?
You know, well, and it's exactly that. I was sitting around Saturday evening, and I don't know why, but it just so happened that I stumbled on a concert that was shot at an ancient amphitheater in Arles, in France.
Yeah, the main one. Yeah, it's a big tourist thing right there.
And, you know, there's a couple of columns that are still all the way complete, and there are a couple that have fallen down over the years. And, you know, we are taught, and I'm sure there's some sort of centrism that there is to this, but we're taught to look at these things and think of the majesty that was Rome. But here, and I've been there, I still do it, but more and more now I see these ruins, and it's amazing that they're still standing, you know, 1,700 years later or 2,000 years later. And I don't see the majesty that is Rome. I see the amazing skill of working people angry, toiling for bread, and maybe just enough wine to take the aches and pains away at the end of a work week and the beginning of the next one. Yeah, weren't no Saturdays and Sundays, weren't no weekends.
Yeah, they work 7 days a week.
But no Caesar, no power of some leader made those stones continue to stand, stacked one upon the other through the damned ages. That was done by working people who were good at what they did, angry, really good. And that's what pisses me off. You know, I was talking with Jim earlier. That's what pisses me off about these no good pricks in ISIS who are destroying antiquities. You know, someone has told them that they're destroying it because they're an offense to the Prophet or to Allah or whatever. Bullshit. In their own religion, Allah does not hate a working man. And those are the works of working men.
Yeah, but
and women.
We're talking about fascism. They don't give a fuck about the worker, you know. They talk that shit, but they don't give a fuck about the worker, and never did. You know, they intend to wipe away everything that came before them to destroy the old reality to rebuild the new one. That is what fascism does. It reinvents history. The past did not exist. The past is what we tell you it was. You know, they're not religious. These motherfuckers don't give a goddamn about Islam. You know, and I'm so happy that some woman was brave enough to confront Jeb Bush not too long ago. It was on Democracy.
Oh, wasn't she awesome?
That was one of the best goddamn things. Your brother started this. Because we got to start doing that. Your brother started this. He's painting cats in goddamn Crawford, Texas, that cowardly son of a bitch. Your brother started this. We wouldn't have this goddamn problem if he hadn't went over there and kicked the fucking hornet's nest. Right, but no, fascist versus goddamn fascist. This is the same shit that went down in Waco. This is what I'm saying, Bob. These are metaphors, man. And we don't have to get religious, you know. But as you know, lay historians, these are fucking metaphors.
We can't see the metaphors for the trees.
You know, the fucking society's on the goddamn skids, because if people were working and eating and had what the fuck they needed and was safe because they didn't have other countries hating on them and shit, there'd be no room for this kind of goddamn thing. It wouldn't exist in the fucking first place. I mean, let's think of Sweden and fucking Norway. That's where the Vikings goddamn came from. You know, you got people who like to take pride in their Scandinavian heritage. All right, fine. You want to take pride in being a fucking, you know, Marauder? Okay, go ahead and do that. But that was how long ago? They haven't fucked with anybody, in, you know, once they got solid. What? Because they didn't have any goddamn thing. They spread from one place to the other because
yeah, the Swedes stopped kicking ass. 16th century,
something
thereabouts.
Like that.
Yeah,
they found out doing business is a lot easier, and people don't have to fucking get hurt. You know,
right? Well, and that's large. You know, the history of the Norse people has been sort of reappreciated. Yeah, they went and they did some burning and sacking and pillaging. but they weren't stupid people. So when, say, the King of France came to him and said, listen, I got some real estate up here. It's not really busy right now. I think we can get you a VA loan. Why don't you guys move in there and you swear fealty to me, and when those, you know, and when there's trouble, you know, we'll get you a good fight because we know you like a good fight. And they said, you know, that sounds like a pretty sweet deal. You mean we can farm it and shit? And they, oh, yeah, you can farm to your heart's content. Hello, Normandy.
Yeah. England. You know, Scotland. I mean, Ireland, what the fuck? You know, I mean, look, their main thing was they didn't have, their populations are growing. They didn't even have wood. You know, so it was a big fucking thing to be able to go someplace and get.
Well, actually, they had wood. That's why their populations were growing, dude.
Well, that's not what the sagas say.
No, that's a joke. It's a joke, Angry. It's a joke.
Oh, sorry.
They had wood. Sorry. That's why their population was growing. Tough crowd.
I got it. Sorry. But in any case, you know, back to Earth. You know, I mean, these are metaphors. And like I said, it's really easy to point to the black community, and we should, because, you know, things are fucked up. I goddamn know. You know, I fucking live there. But at the same time, why did it get fucked up? What's the excuse for these bikers? I mean, it's obviously the same shit that fucking happens in the black community. Poverty. You know, I've never known anybody that wanted to be a fucking gangster because they were doing well, because they wanted excitement.
The wannabes are like that. The wannabes.
Yeah, wannabes are idiots. Wannabes all in the fucking graveyard. You know, the wannabes add on to the fucking chaos. The wannabes are a fucking problem. You know, like I told you, you know, on my goddamn show, I get these guys, I mean, I don't know why they do this. You know, like, oh man, you know, you interviewed a pimp a couple of years ago. You know, what was it like? And it's like, man, get this bullshit out of your mind. You know, what the fuck is wrong with you? The fuck? Why do you want to do this? What, you know, what are you thinking about? And then you realize he's listening to this, he's listening to that, he's watching this TV show, watching that TV show. And it's like, come on, man, turn all that bullshit off and pick up a fucking book, please. And it's the same thing with this biker thing. I mean, what is it? Sons of Anarchy, right? My wife was like, she just said the other night, she goes, I wonder how much violence this TV show is causing. She just said that before I found out about Waco. You know, she just said that. She goes, I wonder how much violence, how many wannabes are going to, you know, go around and try to live this lifestyle who do not live this fucking lifestyle, you know, who want to get involved in this type of
thing. I mean, how Breaking Bad was what went down in Waco?
And look at that. Here you got Breaking Bad. You have a white guy who goes into the drug business, and he's a hero. You had Dexter.
Look at that picture. Half of those people look like extras from Breaking fucking Bad.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. They're not being called thugs. They're not being called thugs. And I saw that photograph. The one.
Yeah,
because
if you call them thugs, they will shoot you.
Yeah, and see, and that's the other thing I wanted to talk about. When I used to be in the club business, it's like, yo, bikers, they talk to them completely differently than the way they did to just about everybody else. You know? It's like, sir, can I speak to you, sir? Can you show me your ID, sir? You know? I'm watching this.
Well, no, it's the same thing with that video that I saw the other day on my Facebook page. I think Ron put it there. When the cop comes up to talk to the white, it's, sir, can you tell me why, sir? Why are you carrying the gun, sir? Sir, may I see your identification, sir? Have a nice day, sir. And the other cop sees the black guy with the same rifle, get on the ground, I will kill you.
Yep. Certainly goddamn will, even if you don't have a gun.
And frankly, let's be clear about something. If we can excise discussions of race from this particular topic, Angry, I actually want the cops to do the get-on-the-ground thing with anybody who's walking around my neighborhood with a semi-automatic assault rifle. I don't want, sir,
you would think
pretty
that.
Please. Yeah, I want, put down the weapon and step away.
You would think that. I mean, I'm in Portlandia, and it's happened a couple of times where, you know, go to get some ice cream, I suppose, with their, you know, their field-grade sidearm and their field-grade assault weapon. You know, slung across their shoulder with their child, with a balloon, walking to get ice cream. And, you know, people freaked out, ran out of the place. I wasn't in the shop. I was walking past it. And, you know, a couple of people stopped them. You know, some men who looked like they had either active or served, and said, you know, they're like, what? I can see them. They're like, what the fuck are you doing? You know? And it's the same thing that you said. I got a constitutional right to carry this. And they look like they're about to cry, you know, because you're stepping on their constitutional rights. But when you ask them about the constitutional rights of the people in Baltimore, though, oh, they don't have any constitutional rights. They need to just do what they need to do and get rid of them. So, you know, are we going to hear the same attitude now about these bike gangs, that they're ready to clear the streets now of the bike gangs? Is that going to happen?
Nope.
Yeah.
No. Somebody will ask Hillary Clinton about it. And whatever answer she gives, the right wing and the extreme left Hillary haters will scream, "See, goddammit, Bohemian Grove, goddamn Bilderbergs."
Yeah, well, the Hillary haters are going to say whatever the fuck they're going to say, because they don't really hate Hillary anyway. She's just not on their team by name. You know, they shouldn't have any problems with her. You know, she's into what they're into. She lies. You know, she lies about, you know, ask Sinbad and Sheryl Crow. You know, she doesn't tell the truth. You know, crocodile tears. You know, she sat with her husband and basically came up with the Omnibus Crime Act, you know, which basically put a whole lot of brothers in the goddamn, you know, joint in the first goddamn place, you know, mandated racial profiling in federal law enforcement. Yeah, sure. You know, you can ask her. You know, telling diplomats to get biometric information on people that they're dealing with and shit. Yeah, you know, I mean, they can go ahead and hate her all the fuck they want, but they really don't. See, if she was, you know, to somehow slide to the Republican Party, because she's already a conservative, but if she slid over to the Republican Party and ran with Jeb Bush on some kind of weird-ass, you know,
hybrid third-way ticket.
Yeah, third-way. You read my mind. You read my mind.
Oh, no, I get their emails, dude.
You do? They stopped sending them to me when they found out who the fuck I was. You know, I mean, look, they're looking for exactly that type of thing. And when you have somebody from Duke University saying the type of bullshit that he's saying, and you have Hillary backtracking already on what her and her husband did, and you have Jeb Bush backtracking on what the fuck he's been saying, we're already in the nut house. And even when we look at Senator Sanders, I mean, it's pretty much a desperate look. Because when you look at his voting record, he's really not all that lefty when it comes to a lot of things.
No,
so we're looking at Carter, maybe, with a big S. But, you know, that's about it. You know, ask him how he feels about Israel. Ask any of them how they feel about Israel.
Well, see, there you go.
Where our tax money's going. You know, when our bridges are falling apart and we're paying for their IDF soldiers to be retrained in new vocations. And we got people here that need jobs. Real goddamn jobs. Like maybe rebuilding the fucking country from the inside. So.
There you go. Hey, we got to get out of here, Angry.
Yeah, and please, if you guys can cough up some coins, man, do what you can, support this show. Please.
Thank you, Angry.
Bob Kincaid on the air, if you can. All right, my brother.
Much obliged.
Take care of yourself. Tell Agnes I said hello. Tell the kids all right and peace.
All right, later. Bye now. Our buddy the Angry Indian. What a conversation. We always have dandies with Angry. Hey, Titanic Tuesday's tomorrow. And hopefully, well, you'll join in for the conversation. I'm looking forward to it already. Oh, my God. There's still a stack. Thanks, everybody. Thank you all for keeping us on the air with your kind contributions. Thank you for spending your precious finite time engaging in this conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you very much to thank you to Bill. And thank you to Jan and Jerry. Thank you kindly. And always, always, always. Wrong button. Gina, it's all for you.